Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, day four of the Great War, or as I'm calling it, the Great Debacle. It's only gotten more debacled. We are only delving into greater and greater chaos and nonsense as the war goes on. The messaging has not gotten any better. In fact, I would say it's gotten significantly worse. Completely contradictory and incoherent. It is something to behold, and behold it we shall. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 3rd of March, 2025. Fury as Marco Rubio admits Israel forced U.S. into war with Iran. Quote, the worst possible thing. The U.S. launched preemptive strikes against Iran after learning Israel was about to attack and American troops in the region faced an imminent threat of retaliation, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Monday. Rubio made the revelation on Capitol Hill, where he briefed a small number of congressional leaders on the joint U.S.-Israel offensive. There was absolutely an imminent threat, Rubio stated, and the imminent threat was that we knew that if Iran was attacked, and we believe they would be attacked, they would immediately come after us, and we were not going to sit there and absorb a blow before we responded. So see, it was a preemptive attack on us to preempt the preemptive attack from Iran that was meant to preempt the preemptive attack from Israel. It's very simple. It's all very simple, isn't it? Now, this actually matters a pretty significant degree because legally, Trump is allowed to more or less wage war, do a lot, if there is an imminent threat. If he can prove and if he believes that there is an imminent risk to soldiers or America or our immediate national interests, then he can act with pretty extraordinary, you know, he can go wherever he wants, latitude. Extraordinary latitude on his actions. But if it wasn't an imminent attack, then he just committed us to a war of choice, a war of aggression, without congressional approval, which is a bad thing. Again, we'll get back into this because it is just completely incoherent. I want to bring up also the idea that, we'll get into it. Alex and Nick were talking about how Venezuela really sort of pumped up Trump's ego and his confidence, which led directly to what happened in Iran, which of course was why I was against what happened in Venezuela from the beginning. I did not like the precedent it was setting. At the same time, I wonder if that wasn't part of the brouhaha about, you know, is it legal to bomb these ships, these boats, again, sort of laying the legal groundwork for unlimited intervention by American military overseas against people that don't actually threaten us. I feel like this has all been one big operation, but we'll move on. By the way, guys, I need a clock on my screen here. Global energy costs soar as Iran crisis disrupts shipping oil and gas production. Global oil and gas prices jumped on Tuesday as the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran halted energy exports from the Middle East and Tehran attacking ships and energy facilities, closing navigation in the Gulf, and forcing production stoppages from Qatar to Iraq. We'll get back into that, of course, because it's not just the physical damage that the war will be bringing. It's the economic destruction as well. Trump to Politico, he says, quote, Iran is running out of launchers. So we'll get into who's running out of what here in just a second. He says, Iran is running out of launchers. However, we are talking about reorganizing our THAAD missile systems, including removing ones from South Korea in order to relocate them to the Middle East. As it turns out, it's our defensive missile batteries that are not sufficient to handle the situation. IDF forces strike Iran Supreme Council as group gathers to choose successor to the late Ayatollah. So they apparently bombed the council that is there to choose who will be the supreme leader of Iran next. Finally, quote, depart now. U.S. tells its citizens to urgently leave almost all Middle East countries, including Israel. Just saying, get out. We're not going to help you. Make your own, you know, way out of the country and do it fast because things are about to go down. So we're just completely losing control of the situation, and that's bad. We'll be right back.
I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night. To quote Waylon Jennings.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, covering, of course, the war in Iran, the war on Iran. And we showed the video yesterday, basically as soon as it came out, reacted to it live, I think, with Brandon Weikert, of Marco Rubio basically admitting that Israel forced us into this. I should remove the word basically. He admitted that Israel forced us into this in no uncertain terms. And that claim has been reiterated multiple times by multiple people. Now they're kind of trying to walk this back. This whole thing is crazy. And part of me is like, is QAnon real? Like, things are so crazy, I'm starting to believe in QAnon. That's how bad things are getting at this point, folks. I should need to tell you, QAnon is not real. But is it? I don't know. Why would Marco Rubio go out and say that essentially we got strong-armed into this by Israel? Why would he say that? Like, I've never been a QAnon person, though. Oh, just wait, and oh, we're saving Israel for last, and there's a plan, and the White House or, you know, patriots are in control. I've never believed that. But maybe just out of coincidence, maybe just, I don't know, serendipitously, like, it just worked out this way, that Trump and his administration is so corrupt when it comes to Israel, so beholden to Israel, that they come out and admit it, that it like becomes an issue in the mainstream because they just can't help themselves or be like, yeah, we did this for Israel. We love Israel, 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 Israel. And so now people are like, okay, well, this is a problem then. So again, I'm not saying it's on purpose. I'm just saying it's weird. It's bizarre that Marco Rubio and the Trump administration as a whole would be so beholden to Israel that they come out and admit it and start this whole firestorm. So I got a bunch of videos to play when it comes to the blame game, as we're calling it. This is our blame game segment of the show. And let's go ahead and start with Marco Rubio, if we have that. I don't know if we do. The good thing is we have so very many people blaming so very many different things. Let's go to, oh my God, I'm telling you, I'm sorry, I literally don't even know where to begin, because you also have Steve Witkoff coming out and saying, actually, Iran told us that they have 11 nuclear bombs, or have enough material to make 11 nuclear bombs. So essentially it's gone from, we can't let them have nukes, to, okay, we bombed their nuclear facilities, that's over and done with, but actually now it's about their ballistic missiles, but actually now it's about proxy armies that they fund. So we have to have economic sanctions on them. Oh, look, the economic sanctions have led to riots and protests in Iran. Now we're in support of the Iranian protesters. And we don't want a regime change, but the regime does need to change. And this has nothing to do with nukes. This is about the threat they pose to America, because they've been at war with us for 45, 47 years already. They've killed thousands of American citizens. When? Where? Don't ask. It doesn't matter. Just believe. 1,000 American citizens have been killed by Iran, and you have to believe that. Stop asking for details. And now we're back to they have nukes. Actually, they have 11 nukes, and they told us that they did, and that's why we're having to do this. I mean, the whole thing is just, I mean, convoluted doesn't even begin to describe it. So I'm trying to, like, how do we even make our way through this utter nonsense? So we already have Marco Rubio coming out and saying in no uncertain terms, we had to do this because Israel was going to attack. Once Israel attacked, American bases were going to come under attack. We didn't want to sit there like sitting ducks. So then we decided to preempt the preemptive attack to stop the preemptive attack. None of which makes any sense. And yet is been repeated a few times. So let's go to clip number 8 here. This is Tom Cotton, Representative or Senator Tom Cotton, talking about why we went to this war and basically reiterating exactly what Marco Rubio said.
Israel faced an existential risk, and they were prepared to strike Iran alone. If that happened, Iran was very likely to target our troops. That may address the question of why now? Why not 2 weeks ago? Why not 2 months from now? The president, though, did not want to put our troops in harm's way.
So Wall Street Journal has the story, Trump's case for war with Iran faces growing scrutiny. That's one way of putting it. The Trump administration, in pressing its case for war with Iran, has made a number of accusations about the regime's threats to its neighbors, U.S. troops, and even the American homeland itself. However, U.S. officials and lawmakers with access to classified information, along with experts who have spent their careers poring over public data and government reports, say the administration's assertions are incomplete, unsubstantiated, or flat out wrong. But they do keep insisting that this is the case. They do keep insisting that this is absolutely the reason it's happening. Again, it is beyond absurd where we are at this point. Let's go to clip number 6, because this is Senator Angus King, who basically calls out Marco Rubio for making this statement. And I hate to side with the Democrats. We're going to see a couple clips of Democrats. They're right on this. They're absolutely right. And I don't trust them necessarily. I think they're using this for their own personal political gain, but whatever. As long as it contributes to stopping us going into greater conflict and eventually World War III with Iran, I'm for it. So let's go now to clip 6, Senator Angus King.
Yesterday, Secretary Rubio told us why now. In a stunning statement, we knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces, and we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched these attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. Have we now delegated the most solemn decision that can be made in our society, the decision to go to war, to another country? That's the implication, the breathtaking implication of Secretary Rubio's statement, which to me is the only explanation I've seen as to why this action was taken when it was. There were no objective facts on the ground that said this is something we have to do now. There were no missiles being loaded on launchers. There were no, there was not a nuclear bomb being rolled out. I'd like some response on policy. Is now the policy of the United States that we're going to be taken into a war by the prime minister of another country?
Well, sir, what I would say is, and I think Secretary Hegseth and General Kane went into this yesterday, that it was, and the president has talked about this as well, is the very rapid build-up and reconstitution of Iran's missile, ballistic missile, cruise missile, and one-way attack drone.
But that's been going on for some time. The question is, why was it Sunday?
Well, I think there was a perception that this threat has been manifest. As the president said, they've been killing Americans for 47 years, and this is something where we can see this is going, and they're going to be able to have this kind of missile shield.
So do you dispute Secretary Rubio's statement? I think Secretary Rubio inadvertently told the truth the other day, that this was driven by Benjamin Netanyahu, and here we are in a major conflict. Do you not agree that that seems to be the precipitating factor?
Well, I agree with you that Secretary Rubio told the truth. I wouldn't characterize his remarks. They stand for themselves. I know he's spoken a lot. The remarks I've seen of his, the president, the vice president, the secretary of war, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, focus on the bill that runs conventional.
I find it very disturbing that we're committing this nation to war based upon a decision by a staunch ally, and I'm a supporter of Israel, but I don't think anybody should drive our decision to go to war, but the interest of the United States.
The president made our decision. Another country. That's my understanding.
Sir?
Our understanding of the Department of War. The president made our decision.
Okay, so then again, I think Senator Angus King is in the right there. It sounds an awful lot like we're letting the actions of a foreign state dictate whether or not we go to war. I mean, yeah, that's actually this is actually like a major problem. Like, can we get to the heart of it and say, like, Israel's influence is the problem here? The Israeli influence in America is pernicious and dangerous and unhelpful and has to be rooted out. Like, I think we need to get to the heart of the issue. It's Israeli influence in America that has made us choose all sorts of horrible things for America, that have forced us into positions. Apparently they have the ability to force us to go to war, force us to all sorts of nonsensical, damaging things to ourselves. Let's go to clip number four. Here's another Democrat representative, Representative Crow, again, telling the truth here about whether or not there was an imminent threat. Let's watch.
This is a discussion that has not been had because he bypassed Congress. The accountability
A president has the right to take military action for 60 days.
If there's an imminent threat, and there is no imminent threat. Let me
be
really
clear.
Well,
that might be your opinion.
It's not my
opinion.
I sit on the Armed Services and the Intelligence Committee. Yeah. If there are imminent threats, they have an obligation to tell us about it. I have seen no imminent threat. And even people within the administration have denied that there's an imminent threat. So listen, a president.
So again, what was the imminent threat? The imminent threat was that Israel would attack Iran and then Iran would attack back. We have no ability to restrain Israel or to contact Iran and say, hey, Israel's doing this on their own. Don't blame us. No, this was all coordinated. It was coordinated. It happened in collaboration with one another. I mean, this was not unplanned or a surprise. I think this was happening in very close cooperation between Israel and America. I just think Israel was leading the dance, as it were. Here's where it gets crazy. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is Steve Witkoff, the negotiator for America and Israel, I guess, against Iran. Here's what he says about, you know, how the talks broke down. This is like the craziest retcon you could possibly imagine. Let's watch.
90% materials, Sean, can be brought to 90%. That's weapons grade, in roughly 1 week, maybe 10 days at the outside. The 20% can be brought to weapons grade inside of 3 to 4 weeks. And let me say this, because I forgot this small little detail. In that first meeting, both the Iranian negotiators said to us directly, with, you know, no shame, that they controlled 460 kilograms of 60%, and they're aware that that could make 11 nuclear bombs, and that was the beginning of their negotiating stance. So they were proud of it. They were proud that they had evaded all sorts of oversight protocols to get to a place where they could deliver 11 nuclear bombs.
Yeah, I don't believe that. I don't believe that in the slightest. It seems like the most ridiculous, again, retcon, right? Going back and going, oh, shoot, nobody's fallen for the... I mean, they aren't even really coming out with lies, but it's like, all right, the ballistic missile thing is not really hitting people. The whole, like, well, we had to attack because we were going to be attacked things, not really selling it. So it seems like they just, like, tried a bunch of excuses, and they're just like, yeah, screw it, go back to nuclear weapons. And just say they have 11. Let's say 11 nuclear. They have 11 nuclear weapons, guys. I mean, so that, so obviously we had to attack because they had 11 nuclear weapons. I mean, do we really think that the Iranians went into the meeting with Steve Witkoff and just apropos of nothing, we just felt like bragging. We're just like, you know, that we have 11, you know, we have enough material for 11 nuclear weapons. We could create nuclear weapons at any point. So guess you want to go to war with us now. Like, why would they say that? That makes no sense. It just feels ridiculous. It feels like the most ridiculous, backwards compatible excuse you could ever imagine. It's like, at least when we went into Iraq, they laid out the weapons of mass destruction lie before we went in. In this case, we went in and now they're scrambling to backfill the excuse. No, actually, they totally told us that they had 11 nuclear weapons. They said it. Gee, those crazy Iranians, right? They must be crazy if they act like this. It really is beyond ridiculous. Let's go to that Rubio clip. So here's Rubio again laying it out. No uncertain terms, no uncertain words. This is the reality. Let's watch.
The United States conducted this operation with a very clear goal in mind. I haven't got a chance to see a lot of reporting. I don't understand what the confusion is. Let me explain it to you, and I'll do it once again as clearly as possible. Perhaps you'll report it that way. The United States is conducting an operation to eliminate the threat of Iran's short-range ballistic missiles and the threat posed by their Navy, particularly to naval assets. That is what it is focused on doing right now, and it's doing quite successfully. I'll leave it to the Pentagon and the Department of War to discuss the tactics behind that and the progress that's being made. That is the clear objective of this mission. The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic, and in fact, it bears to be true because, in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act.
So there you go. Again, he lays it out perfectly clear. Like, this wasn't a misspeaking incident. This wasn't, you know, us reading into it what he didn't say. No, he said it very clear there. Israel is going to attack Iran, and if they did, then Iran would attack us, so therefore we attacked Iran first to preempt the preemptive strike that was in response to Israel's preemptive strike. I mean, no wonder people are pissed. No wonder people are angry at this. No wonder the headline is Fury as Marco Rubio admits Israel forced U.S. into war with Iran. Now, this has been denied by other people. We can go to clip number two here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu being asked about this with Sean Hannity. Let's call him Mike Hannity. With old Mike Hannity yesterday. And there are rumors going around. I mean, the rumors that I'm hearing, Kim.com posted about this and others basically saying from insider sources of the White House that Trump is very angry about how things are going, was yelling at Pete Hegseth. And they said that Trump sort of forced Netanyahu to go on Fox, was going, this isn't going well. I need Netanyahu to make the case to the American people and send him to go on Hannity. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was odd that you had Trump yesterday saying everybody has to tune in to Netanyahu at 9. Again, this whole thing is just not being handled with the tact that Trump almost always displays with this type of, you know, public relations situation. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu being asked if he forced America's hand. Let's watch.
There are people that say, well, the prime minister of Israel dragged Donald Trump into it. And as somebody that's been friends with him over 30 years, nobody drags Donald Trump into anything, number one. But I want to get your reaction to that.
An evil
laugh. You're right. I mean, that's ridiculous. Donald Trump is the strongest leader in the world. He does what he thinks is right for America. He does also what he thinks is right for future generations. And frankly, we're partners in that effort because I've devoted my life to securing the life of the one and only Jewish state. And believe me, it's been a struggle. I've known the pangs of war. I lost a brother in war and in battle. I myself fought terrorists and was wounded in liberating hostages from a hijacked plane. I held a fellow soldier in my arms when I was 18, and he died in my arms. I know the cost of war, but I know sometimes that war is necessary to protect us from the people who would destroy us. And that's what free societies have to understand.
You know, it's weird how good Benjamin Netanyahu is at this type of thing, because you got to admit he's good. I mean, you don't have to believe him. You can understand that he's full of crap. But like, he has this ability to just answer completely different questions than were asked. No, sir, you were asked about whether America forced or whether Israel forced America into this, whether Israel's actions sort of made it a foregone conclusion that America would have to get involved because they would suffer. That was the question asked. You just spent a minute and a half talking about, I've been to war. I know the struggles of war. It's like, okay, what? No, did you force America or not? But he also, it's like he has these certain things that he says, and we've noticed this before, right? Whenever he's asked about anti-Semitism or anything else, when he's asked, like, did you kill Charlie Kirk? And he's like, bah, you know, in the Middle Ages, people said Jews poisoned wells. And it's like, okay. So he's reverted back to his, like, you know, fallback, I don't know what you call it, you know, impulse power, just like, reset, just say a talking point, say an evergreen talking point that you have. But in that answer, he starts first by praising Donald Trump, beefing up Donald Trump's ego. Me forcing Trump's hand, he's too strong and handsome for anything to be forced in Trump. When Trump makes a decision, that's all him because he's so strong and powerful. And it's like, I really hope Trump is not falling for this crap. Here's Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House. Again, like, this is the crazy part. It is just completely incoherent, everything that they're saying. So Marco Rubio says, in no uncertain terms, Israel forced our hand. Then they've spent the last 24 hours or so trying to walk that back and saying, no, that's not the case. Actually, it's all different. He was misheard. I mean, I've got an article today, I think from Newsweek, but I mean, straight up, and Caroline Levitt tweeted it out, White House spokeswoman, you know, no, Rubio did not say Israel forced America's hand. Yes, they did. And then you keep repeating it. Here's Mike Johnson.
To me, the most critical point is that this was a defensive measure, a defensive operation. And why is that? I took some notes, and this is not classified, so I'll tell you what I think is important. Israel was determined to act in their own defense here, with or without American support. Why? Because Israel faced what they deemed to be an existential threat. Iran was building missiles at a radical rapid clip, to the point where our allies in the region could not keep up. As you know, Iran has long vowed to take out Israel, wipe it off the map, and they have long seen that as a critical threat to their very existence. Because Israel was determined to act with or without the U.S., our commander-in-chief and the administration and the officials I just named had a very difficult decision to make. They had to evaluate the threats to the U.S., to our troops, to our installations, to our assets in the region and beyond. And they determined, because of the exquisite intelligence that we had, that if Israel fired upon Iran and took action against Iran to take out the missiles, then they would have immediately retaliated against U.S. personnel and assets. We have troops in harm's way, and we have many Americans in the region, and that was of a great concern. If we had waited for all of those eventualities to take place, the consequences of inaction on our part could have been devastating. We don't know at what magnitude, but you can
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you need this explained to you. He just said exactly what Marco Rubio said. He just reiterated exactly what Rubio said, as if like them explaining it more is going to make it better. It's like, no, we understand. We understand. He's like, no, but see, Israel was going to attack Iran no matter what. And then Iran was going to attack us, so we had to, like, be prepared. And it's like, no, we get it. You don't need to explain that. It's not that we don't understand. It's that you're admitting that Israel forced us to start a war with Iran. And that's the problem. What do you not understand about that? So that's Mike Johnson reiterating exactly what Marco Rubio said.
We've got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean. And
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should have.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is going to change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant.
Absolutely.
Everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain and the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals, things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum, all these things that it protects you from. Why methylene blue works. It does. It counters that.
Let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feel it, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest, though. You got your own special brand. Is this good or
what? No, this is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. By easier, what do you mean? Compared
just
to
the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But it's, yeah, it's.
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, so your doctor must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your blood. It's amazing.
Hey, this is Doc Chambers here. I'm out in the field right now. Day off from the campaign trail doing some work. I got things to catch up on, so it's called a refit day. But I'm getting refit with Alex Jones' methylene blue. It's pretty good. I got to say, I've been using it on the road since we left the studios. And I've been taking it for a while. I had a traumatic brain injury in Iraq in 2004. There's been a lot of studies out there that show that with post-dementia patients and TBI patients, it's been used for years. It's just not very well known with regard to demyelination, what it can do to improve your cognition. So that's your brain. Your brain housing these stuff. Hey, thanks, Alex. Appreciate you. We're going to stay on.
This methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am. And the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and methylene blue. Get it while you can.
Powered by Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I sat out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, with the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus. Classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. So Marco Rubio just gave a follow-up answer where he denied answering what he answered yesterday. Because this is all embarrassing. But here's Marco Rubio like an hour ago, I guess trying to clarify his statement from yesterday, which we just played. And then we just played a statement from Mike Johnson, which reiterated exactly the same thing, that Israel is going to attack Iran, and we felt that we needed to attack Iran with them, because otherwise we would get attacked and we'd be like sitting ducks. Completely crazy that that has been admitted multiple times by people in the administration and the head of Congress for the Republicans. But here's Marco Rubio saying that's not at all what he said. That was totally not what he said. Let's watch.
Yesterday
you talked about Israel.
Mr. Secretary.
Please, guys, I can't hear them all.
Yes.
Yesterday, you told us that Israel was going to strike Iran and that's why we needed to get involved. Today, the president said that
no.
Iran was going to get.
Yeah, your statement is false. So that's not what he, I was asked very specifically. Were you there yesterday?
Yes, I asked.
Okay. No, were you the one that, because somebody asked me a question yesterday, did we go in because of Israel? And I said, you asked me that, you, that follow up. And I said, no. I told you this had to happen anyway. The president made a decision, and the decision he made was that Iran was not going to be allowed to hide behind its ballistic missile program, that Iran was not going to be allowed to hide behind its ability to conduct these attacks. That decision had been made. The president systematically made a decision to systematically destroy this terroristic capability that they had, and we carried that out. I was very clear in that answer. This was a question of timing, of why this had to happen as a joint operation, not the question of the intent. Once the president made a decision that negotiations were not going to work, that they were playing us on the negotiations, and that this was a threat that was untenable, the decision was made to strike them. That's what I said yesterday, and you guys need to play it. If you're going to play these statements, you need to play the whole statement, not clip it to reach a narrative that you want to do, all right?
This is your statement.
So I just, I mean, they're scrambling. They're basically trying to change their answer retrospectively. But again, they've reiterated it multiple times. It's so weird that they're trying to claim that they're not. Like, I just don't even understand what the thinking is here. Let's go to, because Trump was asked about this as well. He had a completely different answer. Let's go to clip number 65 here. Trump says he may have forced Israel's hand. It wasn't Israel forcing his hand. No. It was the other way around. Israel. I mean, it's not like Israel wants to go to war with Iran or something. It's like they're like, no, Trump, please don't go to war with Iran. He's like, ah, it's just, this is retarded. Let's go to clip 65 here.
Your hand to launch these strikes against Iran? Did that
pull
the United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack. If we didn't do it, they were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that. And we have great negotiators, great people, people that do this very successfully and have done it all their lives very successful. And based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand. But Israel was ready and we were ready. And we've had a very, very powerful impact.
So again, it's like, what are we talking about here? What are we doing here? I mean, they were negotiating. They absolutely were negotiating with us. And in the middle of negotiations, we started this attack just like we did last time. I mean, again, it's just, it's such a joke almost. Like, this is just such a giant joke because it's just so obvious what's really happening. Trump went to war with Iran for Israel. No explanation, no justification, no attempt to frame this as being good for America. And at the end of the day, I don't know, because Israel's not even doing too hot after this. I mean, they bombed the hell out of Tel Aviv yesterday. Iran just bombarded Tel Aviv. They very much are not able to rely on the Iron Dome at all. But let's go to clip number 9 here, because again, got to give it to the Democrats, even though, you know, they may just be doing this for purely political purposes because they don't like Trump and they'll oppose whatever he does. But I don't know. I'm going to praise Elizabeth Warren now. That's what I'm going to do. Here's Elizabeth Warren talking about Trump's national defense strategy. Clip number 9.
So you think America first means starting a war anywhere, anytime? You know, I'm confused because you're here to discuss the Trump administration's national defense strategy, and I'll quote it back to you. No longer will the department be distracted by interventionism, endless wars, regime change, and nation building. Close quote. Interventionism, that means going to another country and bombing them, endless wars, wars that may last, we don't know how long because there's no clear end point. Regime change, which the president has said this is all about, and nation building. Evidently, the president seems to think he's going to come in and build a different Iran. Now, is that
Senator, I don't,
putting America first and following your own
I think I would characterize it fundamentally differently. The defense strategy does talk about the threat posed by Iran and the need to have credible military options. And I don't think this is, as we understand from him and in the goals of the military campaign, this is certainly not nation building. This is not going to be endless as the president.
So this is not in your mind interventionism?
I don't think this is, no, I don't think that's what that, you know, nation building, endless wars, that's definitely not.
That's actually the very first word in the Department of Defense.
Interventionism is a more, I would say, you know, kind of responsibility to protect or something. It's obviously not, you
really?
Know,
and we didn't
defined.
Do this in order to try to protect Israel?
I think that's one of the goals. It's obviously we're serving our own interests.
Oh, so it is interventionism. Interest. And how about the endless war part?
Well, I don't think
is there a clear goal that we will know when this is over?
Well, the president's going to decide exactly how we do it. The military campaigns have clearly defined
scope. Okay, and the regime change part, remind me about that. The president, of course, has called it regime change. Do you disagree with him?
No, I think the president has said that this is an opportunity for the people of Iran to rise up and overthrow their oppressors. But
yeah,
as he indicated, the Venezuela model could be one the other day.
Does that sound like regime change?
I think the goals of the military, obviously, allowing the Iranian people to take this matter into their own hands is one of the options here, but the American military campaign is got more.
So that's great.
Goals.
So the Trump administration first says it's going to be America first, then puts out a national defense strategy, and then goes to war alongside Israel illegally, unconstitutionally. And that is now the policy of the Trump administration. Say one thing in a campaign, write it down on paper, and then go do whatever the hell you want.
The time
that
of the
wrong.
Senator has...
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Again, that's why I opposed what was happening in Venezuela, because it was exactly the same arguments being made then. Oh, well, it's an imminent threat because drug runners are bringing cocaine that will kill people in overdoses. And it's like, that is not an imminent threat at all. Yeah, I hate to say I told you so, but, you know, when this was happening in Venezuela, we had a very clear chance to stand up and go, no. We like Trump, but he's not allowed just to start wars overseas on a whim with this vague and complicated connection to established precedent. It's ridiculous. John Brennan says this was a bad mistake, I'm sure. So, again, I think Elizabeth Warren is exactly right there. I think it makes absolutely no sense. The way Trump is pursuing this legally and, you know, with the way our government is supposed to work, this is just frankly illegal. And when it comes to nation building or regime toppling, it's like, I don't want a regime change war, but if you're going to have a war, there should be some sort of plan. There should be some sort of end game that you're going with, and regime change, as tricky as that might be, at least it's a conclusion. We don't even have that. And it doesn't mean that we're not trying to do a regime change. It just means we haven't thought about it or planned it or put anything in place to guarantee that there would be some sort of changeover of leadership. What's much more likely to happen is you're going to have factionalism. And again, we've been laying this out for weeks. Every time we talk about the Iran war, it's obvious they're not trying to, you know, they don't believe that, oh, they just have a bad leader. If we replace them, the Iranians will love us now. No, they want to destroy Iran totally and leave it as a fractured mess of, you know, interfactional conflict for the rest of time. But again, it's hard to even lay out like what the reasoning is. Let me just read you some of what I have here, okay? So the White House outlined its objectives in Operation Apex Fury. It's Epic Fury, but people are calling it Operation Apex Fury. Official statement emphasized this is not a war, but a, quote, major combat operation. The stated objectives are the demilitarization of Iran, destruction of its missile forces, production facilities and naval fleet, elimination of the terrorist regime, protection of the United States from current and future threats, ensuring that Iran does not possess nuclear weapons. Again, okay, so... what? How are we going to do any, let alone all of those things? I guess we've taken out their Navy already. But this was what was put out basically by the White House to the Republicans to say, you know, here's how you answer these questions. If they ask, like, what the hell are we doing? Why are we doing this? These are the statements that are provided. Again, nothing about helping the people of Iran. Nothing about, I mean, they do say you know, replace their regime or ensure their regime's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region. So that would be regime change. But it's not regime change, but we do need a new regime. Again, completely ridiculous. This is the story from the National Review. No, it says, Marco Rubio did not claim Israel dragged Donald Trump into a war. But he did, though. But he did. They say Rubio made two main points. One was about the purpose of the war against Iran, which he said was to eliminate Iran's ballistic missile threat, attack drones, and the threat its Navy poses to global shipping. He then said, the second question I've been asked is why now? In answering this question, he said, quote, we knew there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that would precipitate an attack on American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. So again, they try to claim that this was out of context, but it's not. No, that is the context. And he answered it truthfully. It's just embarrassing to admit that you're all literal traitors who should be tried and convicted for sedition, treason, working for a foreign power, having taken an oath to support America. I mean, in any like reasonable situation, everybody involved in this debacle would actually be hung for treason. Do you understand that? That when you have one country and its leadership working secretly, clandestinely on behalf of another country and getting the first country into war for the sake of that second country, like that's treason. That's treason. That's sedition. I mean, these people should all be in jail as far as I'm concerned. That's just how it is. Like Trump, Rubio, like I'm not even joking. This is treason. There should be treason trials. And as part of the, you know, treason trials, as part of the necessary, obviously far overdue expulsion of these treasonous characters, like we need to ban all dual citizens in government, completely extricate any influence Israel has, ban AIPAC, forget forcing them to register under FARA. No, they should be banned outright. And the American government should use its capabilities to find out, you know, who's involved with those things and, you know, charge them with crimes because we're in it now. It's not like this is something that they did and it could be like, oh, we got caught or it didn't go that well and we just back off and, you know, no harm, no foul. No, there's been harm. There already has been harm. People have already died from this. American servicemen have lost their lives. Families will be eating Thanksgiving dinner with an empty chair this year because of these people doing this. And that's the smallest amount of damage this could do. I mean, this could literally lead to World War III. And these people did this literally at the behest of and for the sake of Israel. And that's not our country. So these are treasonous actors. We have been betrayed. Okay. Just making that perfectly clear. All right. So yeah, I understand why they are like embarrassed that he admitted that. You probably shouldn't have admitted that, but you did. And it's obvious that it's true. Then it gets crazier, folks. It gets even crazier because then the excuse that they're giving to the soldiers that they're deploying is apparently a religious reason. From the cradle, U.S. troops report commanders are framing the Iran war as, quote, God's plan. As first reported by independent journalist Jonathan Larson, a U.S. combat unit commander told non-commissioned officers that the war on Iran was part of, quote, God's divine plan, allegedly claiming that President Donald Trump was, quote, appointed by Jesus, allegedly to ignite Armageddon. So Donald Trump has been appointed by... So yeah, we're deploying to Iran, boys. Don't worry. This is all part of God's divine plan. Donald Trump has been anointed by Jesus to start the apocalypse. So gear up. Let's go. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? The complaint filed with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is one of more than 110 logged within 48 hours from over 40 units across at least 30 installations. Complaints, including Christians, a Muslim, and a Jew, have requested anonymity to avoid retaliation. The Pentagon has yet to respond. According to MRFF President Mikey Weinstein, service members report unrestricted euphoria among segments of the chain of command portraying the assault on Iran as biblically sanctioned and tied to end-time prophecies in the Book of Revelation. One NCO wrote that such rhetoric is eroding morale and violating constitutional oaths, particularly for troops in ready support status who could be deployed at any moment. The controversy unfolds as Secretary of War Pete Hegseth expands overt evangelical programming within the Pentagon, including prayer sessions and Bible studies aligned with staunch pro-Israel theology. Weinstein reports that many U.S. commanders appear particularly enthused by the prospect of intensely violent confrontation, emphasizing how much bloodshed they believe necessary to align events with a fundamentalist Christian end times narrative. Folks, the entire world is being held hostage by an apocalyptic death cult. They control Israel and they control America, and they are using Israel to control America and to drive us into apocalyptic, like World War III, end of the world level conflict to fulfill their particular and, in my opinion, deeply flawed interpretation of the Bible. And, you know, this is very odd. Like, this is a very well understood scheme, a plan, an operation by Israel to pay millions and millions of dollars to thousands and thousands of evangelical church leaders to take over evangelical organizations, to bend and warp that religion and the celebration of Christianity in America to their particular geopolitical designs. And if you fall for it, frankly, you're an idiot. Like, I cannot believe how flagrant this, like, ultimate sin is, right? And there's debate, but, you know, one belief is that the only unforgivable sin in the Bible that the Bible lists out is basically using God's name in vain, by which they mean justifying your actions as if you're operating for God, right? To say, well, we have to do this because Jesus says so. Not in terms of, like, loving your neighbors, but going to war with Iran. Why? Because Jesus commands it. And if you're not for war with Iran, you're a sinner. You're the devil. You're a Satanist. It's like, yeah, that's what they're doing. So I can't understand how a Christian could not, or could, like, be okay with or not notice the fact that your religion is being infiltrated and manipulated and taken advantage of for purely material and unrighteous and frankly evil causes. But obviously it's had a profound effect. And again, I don't even recognize this as Christian. In my opinion, this isn't Christian. This is some sort of weird Judeo, I don't even know what. Like, it is more Jewish than Christian by a long shot, considering the fact that Christians believe that our Messiah already came. It was Jesus Christ. And yet all of this apocalyptic end of the world, great battle discussion is all about bringing the Messiah forward. So it's not like, I don't know, they're using Christianity as a cloak to hide this under. But in reality, this is just pure, like, fundamentalist Jewish extremism. That's just, like, dictating our foreign policy at this point. And I wouldn't be okay with that either. And in fact, it's just obviously completely against the law, like a flagrant and horrifying violation of the First Amendment. We don't have a church religion. We don't have a church of state. We don't have a national religion. And yet, we're going to war on the basis of this narrow interpretation of apocalyptic, end time, just like Revelations literature. This is crazy. It just is beyond crazy. Don't try to argue against it, but don't for a single second think that if you are a serviceman, you'll be able to, you know, express your opinion about this. Now, apparently we couldn't do anything when the Seditious Six basically told our men in uniform to disobey their orders, which again wasn't the right way to approach it. At the time, at the same time, I think, regardless, nothing was done to them. Obviously, some of them were still, like, technically under the purview of the military justice courts, but nothing was done to them. But apparently, servicemen are now being kicked out of the army for criticizing Israel through this video. 20-year servicemen in our armed forces are being removed for criticizing Israel. Do we have that video, guys? Well, we'll bring it in and show it. Sorry, we're having a lot of technical difficulties. You'll probably notice, like, our videos, we're having, there's something going on with our computer, so it's, we're working rapidly behind the scene to fix it. So we'll have to bring that video in just a little bit. Let's go to clip 38. If we can go to clip 38, this is the serviceman talking about, he's been in the Army for 20 years, but it's just been removed. Let's watch.
So after 20 years of service in the military, yesterday I got pulled into an officer's office and counseled for posts that I have on my social media. During the counseling, they told me I'm under investigation as a threat to national security. When I asked for proof, like what the posts were yesterday, they refused to give it to me. They made me come back today to further go over stuff. They gave me the proof, and the proof they gave me are anti-Israel posts. Now, when I joined the military, I took an allegiance to support the United States of America. I did not ever take an allegiance to support Israel. But yet, I am deemed a threat to national security because I do not support Israel and their genocide against the Palestinian people. Yes, you heard that right. I am deemed a threat to national security because I don't support Israel's genocide against the Palestinian people. Since when does not supporting a foreign nation get a U.S. soldier investigated for being a threat to national security?
So there you go. A U.S. Army soldier investigated for criticizing a foreign state. The American military is now being subjected to thought crime interrogations over their support of Israel. You can be a communist. You can be anti-American, and they won't kick you out of the Army. But if you oppose Israel, and specifically if you oppose the, you know, apocalyptic death cult, your Jewish supremacist extremist interpretation of the world, and say, not only do I not like Israel, I also don't want to go die in a giant apocalyptic conflagration to bring about the end times that the Antichrist can come about. It's like, well, you can't be in the Army anymore. It's like, no, this is the issue. This is the issue. We have to get rid of Israel. We have to separate ourselves completely from Israel in every aspect of our government, and we have to do it rapidly. It's beyond absurd.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexlintour.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexlintour.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Second hour of War Room is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to be joined in the next segment by my Moonbase Live co-host, Lebanon John. He's going to give us an update as to what is unfolding in Lebanon, as that has become a very important front in this war. We're covering in the last segment this story. U.S. troops were told Iran war is Armageddon and the return of Jesus. This is from jonathanlarson.substack.com. And I just want to note that this wasn't a one-off. This wasn't one particular, you know, religious extremist, evangelical, you know, CO that's telling his troops, like, we're involved in something, you know, significant here. No, no. This, they actually found over 100 complaints from something like 40 different military installations, meaning that this was like a memo that went out. This was like an organized, choreographed thing. They sent out a message to their leadership saying, hey, tell your troops that this is why we're going to fight. Because, you know, we have to start the end of the world so we can build the third temple and usher in the Antichrist, and then all of the non-Jews can be the slaves of the Jews. Aren't you excited for that? Aren't you so excited to be a part of this wonderful transformation into hell on earth? Meanwhile, a 2009 white paper from America suggests using failed talks as a scapegoat for Iran regime change war. A think tank analysis document from 2009 outlined how the U.S. or Israel could launch a regime change war on Iran under the guise of negotiations, using the cover of failed diplomacy to curry public favor for an otherwise unpopular conflict. That was a white paper called Which Path to Persia. This story can be found at Infowars.com, which sort of explains a lot, because when it comes to Iran, they say they don't know why the negotiations failed, that basically we are in the middle of negotiations and we decided to start attacking them. Iran's foreign minister said he's unsure why U.S. attacked during nuclear talks. Here's the foreign minister of Iran.
Is the negotiated settlement with the United States still possible?
Well, you answered this question. We negotiated with the United States twice in the past 12 months. And in both cases, they attacked us in the middle of negotiation. And that has become a very bitter experience for us. In last June, we were negotiating. We had five rounds of negotiations, and we had already fixed the sixth round for 15 June when the Israeli attacked us, and then the U.S. joined the attack. And this time, we had three rounds. Last Thursday, we had a very good discussion, very good talks in Geneva. Both Iranian and the U.S. delegation were happy at the end of 7 hours of negotiations. And I can go into the details of what we agreed and how a deal was at our reach. And when we concluded, the Omani foreign minister, who was impartial intermediator between us, he concluded by saying in his post that we made significant progress this time. We were able to come to a good understanding on some of our differences. Some other differences were left for the next meeting, and we decided to go for Vienna, to send our technical teams to Vienna on Monday, which means tomorrow, to go to the IAEA, and with the help of the International Atomic Energy Organization, try to find technical solutions for the political problems. And we both believed, the both delegations believed that this is possible. So a deal was at our reach, and we left Geneva happily with the understanding that we can reach a deal next time we meet. And it was very unfortunate that those who are against against peace, against diplomacy, against negotiation, when they understood that that diplomacy is going on well, they decided to spoil it, and they created a build-up in the media, against the Islamic Republic of Iran, against, you know, the desires of us, against, you know.
So again, we're in the middle of negotiations with these people, and we just decide to attack them. And again, it's like, why would anybody want to negotiate with us ever again? Now, according to RT on X, Iran is claiming they just shot down an F-15, which would be another, you know, major development in this conflict. Lebanon John joins me on the other side to break down the latest. Don't go anywhere.
The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
Get wide awake with Harrison Smith, live on the War Room right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour is on. This is the War Room. I should probably tell you we're about to be joined by Lebanon John to break down the latest of what's going on in the Middle East, but it's probably about dang time that I let you know about the incredible sales we have on thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com is, of course, the only way that you can support us, and if you've been watching this coverage, it's probably not a wonder why. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have any, you know, agreements or partnerships with big corporations because we like to say the truth, and that's inconvenient to these other organizations. To us, it's what it's all about. And so if you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com, we will continue to tell the truth regardless of who likes it and who doesn't. And we make it so easy for you to do so. We have incredible products, whether it's the merchandise and the hats and the shirts that are just awesome design. There's new ones every day, or the supplements, which are life changing. And you hear people call in practically every day talking about how, you know, they thought they were just getting old, you know, or thought they just had that pain in their arm and that was just the way life was, until they start supplementing, realize that they are missing some sort of, you know, necessary component in their diet and get better. It's really amazing. I'm not a doctor. I'm not making any medical claims, but you don't know what this stuff can do until you try it yourself. And thealexjonesstore.com is just the best quality supplements you can find. So don't waste your time trying to determine which brand is better and which has more. TheAlexJonesStore.com, best of the best, plus everything you purchase from The Alex Jones Store goes directly into supporting this mission, our outlet, InfoWars, as we continue on into the future. And right now you can get 25% off all t-shirts, hats, and hoodies, as well as The Alex Jones Store March Mega Sale. You're getting 30 to 40% off all supplements. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Now, with that, I'm very happy to welcome my co-host from Moonbase Live. You can watch us by going to Rumble and searching Moonbase Live. You can follow John on X at Lebanon_John. He's an American. People get the wrong idea. Lebanon John is of Lebanese extraction, but he was born here in America and simply follows along what's going on in Lebanon and has a unique view in that regard. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, where are we at, man? What's going on with Lebanon? The latest I heard was that, well, I don't even know what I've heard, because I've heard that Hezbollah was getting involved. I heard that Israel is planning an invasion force into Lebanon, but I don't know what to give credence to. What's happening between Israel and Lebanon right now?
Yeah, so it's been about a year and a half of a ceasefire that was agreed upon, and Israel has never really honored that ceasefire, and Hezbollah has tried to honor that ceasefire, to very similar to Iran, to create a PR image that, hey, look, you know, we're trying diplomacy. We're giving diplomacy a chance, right? That's what Iran was doing. That's what Hezbollah did. Because they want to show the world that, you know, they're not the aggressor. That's their objective with this strategy of engaging in diplomacy or respecting a ceasefire that is just like a one-way ceasefire that's constantly being violated by the other side, because that seems, you know, silly. But the reason why they're doing that is they want to show that they're not the aggressors, okay? So it's been a year and a half. Israel violates the ceasefire constantly. The United States government has been pressuring the Lebanese state to actually take action against the civilian resistance against Israeli occupation. So for those that don't know, South Lebanon was occupied by Israel for like 18 years, and there was a guerrilla war to expel them. And then they tried to reinvade in 2006 and lost head-to-head. And then they tried to reinvade again after the October 7th war, and they lost really bad in that war. They couldn't even take a single town on the border, even with 70,000 people. And, you know, they used their Air Force to blow up a lot of stuff in Lebanon, but the ground invasion just totally failed. So instead, they used political machinations, and they're using the state against Hezbollah and forcing a one-sided ceasefire to then start annexing land and building, like, outposts and, like, taking over land and stuff like that. Now, everything was flattened in South Lebanon in this last go-around. And then since the ceasefire, Hezbollah hasn't done anything. They haven't done any drones, any missiles. They haven't poked up their head. They've done nothing at all. And the Lebanese government has been confiscating weapons here and there every couple of months. And Israelis have had, you know, free roam of the south. And it's, you know, you can remember everybody said, oh, okay, I guess Hezbollah is done for. They seem really wounded. They did all these crazy operations against them, and that's what everyone thought. And so then the Israeli military was having a cabinet meeting about 2-3 days ago to decide to do a surprise attack, a preemptive attack to surge and invade with this time 100,000 tanks, 100,000 people in tanks and armored vehicles, you know, under air cover to try to annex and eradicate Hezbollah's population stronghold in South Lebanon once and for all. And then right as they were making that decision to preemptively attack Hezbollah, we don't really know how Hezbollah did this. I guess they could just tell by reading the troop maneuvers. But somehow they knew it was going to happen, and then they attacked Israel, like, right before Israel could attack them and caught Israel off guard. So then out of nowhere, after a year and a half, Hezbollah fires a couple rockets at Israel, and they said, okay, this is like, you know, us kind of, you know, Hezbollah is like, we are kind of jumping in the war here because you guys have been violating the ceasefire for a year and a half. We can't just keep taking this. And also, this is kind of like revenge for killing their Shiite, you know, religious leader, whatever his name is, Ayatollah Khomeini. And so then Israel starts bombing Lebanon like crazy, as usual. It's been like that since, you know, the 80s. And then starts to invade. And at the same time, something really unprecedented happens. Under severe pressure from the United States government, the Lebanese state officially outlaws any resistance against Israel and then withdraws the state army way back and essentially just cedes southern Lebanon entirely to Israel and just welcomes in 100,000 Israeli soldiers. And anybody who's found attempting to resist that is now an enemy of the state, and they're arresting Hezbollah fighters at checkpoints. And they're saying, you know, we this decision is final. We will never reverse on it. Oh, I forgot to mention, Israel told all the civilians in all these towns in South Lebanon, you need to leave because we're going to blow everything up. And so then all the freeways got packed, a huge exodus of just thousands and thousands and thousands of civilians stuck on the freeway for like 10 hours straight. No food, no water, no police, no government assistance whatsoever. Total abandonment by the state. Now they're just having to live in people's homes all throughout the country, that people of other confessions and other sects are just welcoming these Shiites of South Lebanon into their homes all throughout the entire country, because basically, like, the bottom third of the country has been displaced now into the rest of the country, because everybody knows Israel, this is, they're going for broke. And the plan was this would be the end of the Iranian regime. Simultaneously, this would be the end of Hezbollah, which is of the same religion and ideology somewhat as the Iranian regime. So they're going for broke to resist, to eliminate what they call the Shiite axis of resistance once and for all, right? Does this make sense so far?
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't heard of any of this. The AP has the article. We'll scroll up to the headline. Lebanon's leaders turn on Hezbollah as airstrikes hit Beirut and thousands seek shelter. So this is the story from yesterday, but I had not been aware of that, that the Lebanese government itself basically just said, okay, you know, everybody out, we're giving this over to Israel. This is what it says. Lebanon's health ministry reported at least 52 people were killed and 154 wounded in overnight strikes in the Beirut suburbs in southern Lebanon. The Ministry of Education said schools would be closed Tuesday because of the situation. During the day, Israeli's military carried out dozens of airstrikes on Beirut's southern suburbs as well as southern and eastern Lebanon. Shortly after sunset, an Israeli airstrike in a Beirut neighborhood caused widespread damage, and the Israeli military said it targeted a senior Hezbollah official. So yeah, they've been striking Lebanon pretty relentlessly the last couple of days. And now the Lebanese government has basically abandoned the whole southern part of their country and just handed it over to Israel. I mean, I can understand that Israel is striking out in all directions right now, right? On the same day that they're, you know, getting America to attack Iran, they're going after West Bank settlements and expanding those. They're constantly, you know, doing incursions into Syria, the Golan Heights they've been able to capture from, you know, after ousting Bashar al-Assad. So I understand that they have been desperate to get into southern Lebanon and reclaim it for a long time. Why would the Lebanese government go along with this?
So the commander of the army, using his very limited resources, where he's been intentionally hamstrung by the United States, who is the sponsor of the Lebanese army, he has been intentionally hamstrung in the sense of his equipment and capabilities. He proposed to the president of Lebanon a way that he would be able to defend against the Israeli invasion of 100,000 enemies with state-of-the-art tanks and jets, that with his very modest capabilities in Lebanese army, that he formulated an effective defense strategy to defend the land from occupation. And he proposed it to the Lebanese president, and the Lebanese president started shouting at him and told him, absolutely not, withdraw all the soldiers. We are absolutely not going to fight against Israel whatsoever. And it seems to me that the Lebanese president is worried that he's going to get blown up right in his presidential palace, that if he resists Israel, that the Lebanese state, being an above ground, out in the open, state, that it cannot fight Israel. And you see that going on all over the world, right? Because in Iran, you see Donald Trump and all these other guys being like, President Donald Trump, you see all of them being like, well, it's pretty much blown up everything there is to blown up, you know, almost mission accomplished. They don't really have much left, but Iran is pummeling Israel constantly. So what that means is that all the military assets above the ground that they can just hit with jets are vulnerable and can be taken out in any second. But all the military assets that are underground, those are the ones that actually require invasion to be eliminated. That's why Hamas is still standing in Gaza, because they didn't actually invade these tunnels. So same thing in Iran. They're saying, oh, we've taken out all their capabilities, which is, you know, nobody – how could they say that? They're saying that today. How can they say that we're basically done, we've taken out everything, and look, Iran is still – firing even crazier missiles than ever constantly. They just down into 15. I thought they didn't have any more air defense systems. You know, everyone who believes that stuff, look, people, we got to stop believing state propaganda. Any state, state propaganda is almost always not true. You know, there's the hilarious joke where you don't know if it's true until the government officially denies it. Right. Then you know it's true. And so it's exactly like this, where they're like saying, well, maybe it is going to be a forever war. That's a bluff. What he's saying is, I really hope this ends quickly. It's always the exact opposite of what they're saying. They're basically doing doublespeak, and they're not actually telling the truth. But anyway, so the Lebanese resistance at this point, facing, you know, just recovering from a huge war that just happened where everything got blown up like crazy, they're facing all the satellite power and technological power of remote sensing, which is satellites and drones, and all kinds of stuff, on a tiny little area that's half the size of Rhode Island, with the cumulative technological monitoring capabilities of basically the entire West monitoring this tiny, tiny little space. They can't even stick their neck out for a second without getting immediately blown up. If a rocket is fired from Lebanon, Israel, in an automated way, will hit that exact same spot in a minute or less with five different types of ammunition. Five different kinds of ammunition will automatically hit the exact spot that the rocket came out of. So the technological capabilities against Hezbollah is truly unbelievable. People don't even know how crazy it is. And Israel now is was just welcomed in, and they just were starting to walk right in, and everyone was really nervous, and everyone said, "Is this the end? Is this the end of Lebanon?" Because simultaneously, as the Israelis are occupying the bottom half, they would invite Jolani and his ISIS horde to sweep in from the other side, which is a repeat or a rhyme of history, because in history, this happened again, where Israel and Syria split Lebanon in half, and both sides, but they occupied half of Lebanon, one the other half, one the other half. And so that already happened before with Assad, but this time it would be Jolani. Jolani, being a religious extremist, Wahhabi, Sunni Muslim, he would oppress the Christians, slaughter all the Shiites, and annex Lebanon into like a caliphate. And the thing is, these radical Sunni Muslims are allied with Israel in the form of Saudi Arabia and the Grand Mufti of Mecca and these kind of Muslims. So the United States said, "Hey, this guy in Syria is willing to take over Lebanon. I just got to give him the green light." He said he'll come in and deal with Hezbollah anytime. And they're amassing thousands and thousands of troops and military equipment because they're totally sponsored by the West now. They're not hamstrung like the Lebanese state. They have access to tons of good equipment. And this horde of Sunni Muslims, full of Central and Turkic people from all the way from Chechnya, Dagestan, Turkmenistan, you name it, they brought them all to Syria, an infinite horde of Sunni Muslims radicalized by this Wahhabi Sunni ideology. There's a huge army of them under Jolani in Syria, and they could be given the green light to sweep into Lebanon at any moment. And people think that, so right now, the resistance, Hezbollah in Lebanon, has to face the Lebanese state outlawing them, the terrorist horde of Sunnis sweeping in, and local collaborators who are allied to the terrorists as well, and then local collaborators who are allied to Israel, and then an Israeli invasion from the south, as well as the cumulative might of the Western surveillance right over their heads, in all in an area half the size of Rhode Island. So people basically said, it's over. This is Mission Impossible. There's no way. There's no way they can recover from the past war and do anything. But then today, amazing things have been happening that is going to be, you know, written down in history books. Right on the border, Israeli tanks are getting blown up. They can't find any Hezbollah guys, but they're getting blown up. They don't see who's blowing them up, but they're just getting blown up. Already five tanks have been blown up, and they're hitting missiles in Israel from Lebanon, and the Israelis are saying this is totally different than Iran, where you have a couple minutes to prepare. This hits us instantly, and we have no way to prepare. And the list of things Hezbollah is doing, they're constantly publishing. And unlike Iran and unlike Israel, they don't publish AI videos, and they don't claim things that are totally not true. Hezbollah has a media department that shows evidence and proof of every little thing they do. And they've already blown up five tanks right on the border, which Israel has been walking over this land for a long time. No one thought Hezbollah still had control over that land. And so today, Israel is even having to pull back from certain Lebanese towns. And all the civilians of North Israel have abandoned their homes and are fleeing, and now they're refugees in their own country because they don't feel that their government can protect them. And so the war against Lebanon is going very badly right now. They basically made zero progress. They're being blown up from places they can't figure out from where. They can't even find the Hezbollah fighters to engage them. All they can do is bomb civilians with their jets. And so you might say, oh, that's good news. Maybe. But then they're just going to tell the terrorists from Syria to invade and take over Lebanon. So this is only the beginning. And then Lindsey Graham is demanding that Donald Trump use the United States directly against Hezbollah because Israel's losing. Right. So now Lindsey Graham is campaigning that he wants the United States to get directly involved. But the United States is going to be much of the same as Israeli involvement because it's just more F-35s bombing stuff. But that's never been since 2006, when 2006 war, when Israel invaded Lebanon in 2006, they failed in this 33-day war. They did the Winograd Commission to analyze why they failed with Western military experts, and they concluded that an aerial bombardment is not strategically decisive in these kind of conflicts. So even if Lindsey Graham got his wish and they brought more F-35s to bomb more stuff in Lebanon, that doesn't mean they'll beat Hezbollah. In the end, they never even beat Hamas with that strategy. You have to actually go in the tunnels. But these are like booby trap tunnels. These are scary tunnels to go in. And it's, you know, it's terrifying to go in these tunnels. So Lindsey Graham, if he's not controlled, will probably say, let's send United States Marines into the Hezbollah tunnels, which is like a suicide mission. But these people are crazy.
Wow. Okay. So that's absolutely wild. And I'm just trying to like keep up with what you're saying by searching it myself on X. And yeah, it looks like Hezbollah claimed 13 successful missions as of this morning. Hezbollah and Israeli forces are fighting a ground battle right now. Where are Hezbollah's missiles? Because for a long time, right, there was, you know, touted they had tens of thousands of missiles. They could make them themselves. A lot of them were Iranian made. I know they've entered a little bit into the contest and fired missiles. Is it that automated response that's sort of keeping their missile batteries quiet, or are they launching missiles? Where's the Hezbollah missile cadre that we've heard about for years?
Yeah, it has to stay underground. As soon as they pop out, it is immediately detected and destroyed. The missile launchers, very similar to what's going on in Iran, the cumulative surveillance power is 24/7 seeking where they pop out at, because they don't know until they open the hatch. And so sometimes they, you know, find secret ways to launch maybe from a forest or underneath some cover, but there's all kinds of remote sensing technologies like ground penetrating radar or LIDAR, all kinds of stuff that technologically has been developed by the smartest people all over the world, who then are, you know, brought to the West to develop this technology. And if you do well enough, they bring you into, you know, Lockheed Martin or whatever it is, to develop all this technology that they have that is then used specifically against basically Iran, Lebanon, and, you know, Palestine. And it could be like Chinese engineers, Indian engineers, you know, you name it. It's the cream of the crop of the entire world. The smartest kid, the smartest talent, the smartest youth with unlimited budget to use every physical possible means to stop these guys from defending their country. Like, to be blunt with you guys, that's really what it is. And this is just the civilians of Lebanon, by the way. Like, it's important that people understand. This is literally just the civilians of Lebanon. This isn't like a government. This is just the people who want to hold on to their village that has like olive trees and like goats and like grapevines. Like, that's it. Like, all of this is a battle over like just like a village. But it's their home. You know, you can't, it's not like there's some very important natural resource in South Lebanon. There's nothing there. It's just a humble place. But these people don't want to abandon their homes. So they've gone through all this length to create all this apparatus to defend their home. And so if they pop out, basically they're dead. It's mission impossible. So they're going to, what they've done now is they've coordinated their drones and missile strikes with Iran, because now Iran and Hezbollah and all these guys are using Chinese satellite footage, which cannot be jammed. And they have the capability now, you know, it's like a Hezbollah guy can basically call in an airstrike where an Iranian ballistic missile can hit whatever coordinates that he wants. And they're going to coordinate that to soften up the air defense, overwhelm the air defense, and confuse the air defense to hit the exact positions they want. And so, like, the latest news coming out of Lebanon is there's, like, a conglomeration or a meeting place of Israeli troops preparing for the invasion, and then Hezbollah hit it and ambushes them. And they get hit. And then there's drones coming in from Lebanon, and Israel panics to hit them. And then at the same time, ballistic missiles come from Iran. And then missiles are hitting Tel Aviv from Lebanon at the same time. And it's just going very badly for Israel right now. Iran and Hezbollah are kind of coordinating in a way that no one's ever seen before. So it's things are getting completely out of hand. And the most likely scenario next is for Donald Trump to say, okay, send in these Sunni proxies, send in the ISIS guys, and activate the local collaborators who are all radicalized by Sunni-funded, by Saudi-funded Sunni mosques. They go to these Wahhabi mosques, and they make them into very violent, very radical people. And so there's a segment of the Lebanese society that's pro-Jolani, that believes that Jolani should take over Lebanon, and that it should just be a Sunni caliphate running the whole thing. And so that's the Israeli desire. The Israeli desire is to eliminate this Shiite problem, get rid of Iran, get rid of Hezbollah. And that, what do they say on the news? Oh, the next problem is Muslim Brotherhood. The next problem is Turkey.
Yep.
And so that's their vision. Their vision is to create, if you read Albert Pike's World War III,
Stay on the line, John, because I want to come back and I want to show the video that just broke. You referenced it, of Lindsey Graham telling Trump to go after Hezbollah, and get your comments on that on the other side. Stay with us, folks. More to come. Don't go anywhere.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet.
up to 40% off store wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalists. And the AlexJonesCore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigly. The backup Alex Jones Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, at TheAlexJonesCore.com, you keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexJonesCore.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexJonesCore.com because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win-win. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in, so you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend, special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything on TheAlexJonesCore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAlexJonesCore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene Blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
One thing to President Trump, in case you're watching. In 1983, Ronald Reagan sent Marines and sailors to try to police and deal with the Lebanese Civil War. They were at the end of the runway. Hezbollah attacked the Marine barracks, killed 220 Marines, 18 sailors, and wounded 100 others. Ronald Reagan, who I admire and love, withdrew and never did anything about it. So I'm calling on President Trump today. Join Israel to attack Hezbollah. Avenge the Marines. America never forgets. Those 220 Marines and 18 sailors' families, we want to go after the infrastructure that killed your loved ones. They're IRGC assets in Beirut as I speak. President Trump, come up with a new operation called Semper Fi. fly with Israel and go after Hezbollah, who has American blood on its hands, not only take the mothership of Iran down, also take the proxy of Hezbollah, settle the score, even the account.
Oh, my God. So there's Lindsey Graham calling on President Trump to go to war with Hezbollah now to avenge the Marines that were killed in 1983, despite the fact that Hezbollah wasn't founded until 1985. But don't let little things like temporal consistency get in the way of another good war. With me on the line is Lebanon John. You can follow him on X at Lebanon underscore John. He's my co-host on Moonbase Live. You can follow us on X at Moonbase Live or on Rumble as well. And John's been providing very thorough updates throughout the conflict over the last couple of days. What's your take on that, John, hearing Lindsey Graham encourage Trump to take revenge for the Hezbollah that killed all those Marines all those years ago?
That is his accent. You do the accent really well. Man, that's funny. We got to get you a Lindsey Graham mask and do the impersonation. That would be hilarious. No, you know, that Marines thing is a sad story, no doubt about it. But that was a crazy time period. And then the United States, indiscriminately killed a bunch of people at that time. And then Ronald Reagan said, okay, this is a direct quote from Ronald Reagan. He said, I underestimated the irrationality of the politics of the region, and I'm getting out. Now, the Lebanese Civil War is the playbook that they're going to run on everybody next. That's their ultimate plan. So the Lebanese Civil War, they split every single person. They said you have to be with Team A or Team B, whatever you want to call it, the Hegelian dialectic or just divide and conquer. They said you got to be with the Crusaders or you got to be with the Caliphate. There's no – we don't accept that, you know, neutral. You got to pick one or the other. And in reality, the leaders of this Crusader faction, the leaders of this Caliphate faction, they're actually friends, but they make everyone else fight and kill each other. But they're actually friends, and they're actually on the same team. What ended up happening was this division enabled the conquering from Israel. So, of course, it's like it's not a binary system where there's option A or option B. It's a rock, paper, scissors. It's Christian, Jewish, Muslim. But they don't want you to think about that. And so they're going to make Christians and Muslims fight each other, and then the Jews will be de facto coming out on top. So their vision for World War III, according to Albert Pike, and how they're going to roll out the Antichrist as a peacemaker, a beloved peacemaker that is globally accepted by all these different sides, is they want to orchestrate a monolithic single Islamic faction versus a monolithic single Christian faction. So it'll be the Christian Zionists and the Vatican versus Sunni Muslims. And this is a fake war, which they have planned. The war is going to be real, but the leadership is totally on the same team on either side here. And that's exactly what the Lebanese Civil War was. So it's like they didn't update the playbook. They didn't educate anybody about what happened in the Lebanese Civil War. No one knows anything about it because they plan on running this exact same PSYOP, this exact same play on a grander scale, on a global scale. So in order to set the stage for World War III and the rolling out of the Antichrist, they need to eliminate the legitimate resistance against Israel and instead have a controlled opposition resistance against Israel. For example, Al-Jolani and Turkey and Saudi Arabia. These guys totally work for Israel since forever. They've always worked with and for Israel. But according to their plan, if they achieve their plan, there'll be no more Shiite resistance. There'll be no more Hezbollah. There'll be no more Iran. Then they've already said in the news, okay, after that, then it's going to be Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They're totally, you know, jumping the gun and thinking a couple steps ahead, looking past Iran, looking past Hezbollah as opponents, and thinking, oh, yeah, we totally got this in the bag. Now then the next step is going to be ISIS is just the whole Middle East. The Muslim Brotherhood is just the whole Middle East, and we're going to have to do a crusade and a huge global war because you can actually read Albert Pike's World War III prophecy. It is exactly that. And then they say both sides will eliminate each other, and then we'll be able to roll out essentially satanic worship and Luciferianism straight in everyone's face once we eliminate Christianity and Islam once and for all in World War III. So this is not World War III. This is setting the stage for their plan and their vision for World War III. Now, the truth is, it doesn't look like Iran's going anywhere, and it doesn't look like Hezbollah's going anywhere, to be honest with you guys. I know what Lindsey Graham's saying. What Lindsey Graham is saying is they want to eliminate the legitimate grassroots resistance found in Iran, found in Hezbollah. This is not controlled opposition. This is actual resistance. Instead, they want a fake resistance. They want kabuki theater. They want, you know, kefab. They want a resistance against Israel that is cartoonish version of Islam, the ISIS version of Islam, this evil, you know, version of Islam that just kills all the Christians and wants to do jihad against all the Jews. And then they can, you know, call for a crusade against them. And that's their vision for World War III. So, you know, that's not actually what's going to happen, though. I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying that's what's going to happen. You know, God is in control. They're not God. And God's plan is totally different than their plan. But that's what's going on right now. We're seeing them setting the stage for World War III, where they have this vision. So they want to eliminate the Shiite resistance, and they want to only have this controlled opposition, this phony war that they're going to set up, and they're going to divide everybody in the world. You're going to have to pick a side. You've got to be with the Crusaders, or you're going to have to be with the Caliphate. And they're going to divide the whole world into one or two groups, and then the Antichrist will come out and make peace and end war. And that's their vision for how they're going to roll out the Antichrist.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to ask you a little bit more about that. But I did want to note this, since we were talking about the Beirut bombing in 1983, from Lucas Gage on X. A lot of Marines are saying the U.S. strikes are revenge for the 1983 Beirut bombings. Do they know that former Mossad agent Viktor Ostrovsky said about them? And basically, Viktor Ostrovsky's key claims on the 1983 Beirut barracks bombings are that a Mossad informant who monitored smuggling in Beirut reported that Shiite militants were modifying a large Mercedes truck with hidden compartments for a massive bomb. Mossad analysts concluded that the truck's size limited targets to a few high-profile sites, with the U.S. Marine barracks as a prime vulnerable candidate. The info reached Mossad director Nahum Adamoni, who decided against sharing specifics with the Americans. Instead, they sent only a vague routine warning of, quote, possible operations against you. Full details, including truck description, were shared with Israeli sites in the area for their own protection. The motive was avoid risking the informant, let the U.S. face consequences for intervening in Lebanon, sour U.S.-Arab relations to Israel's benefits to, quote, teach the Americans a lesson. Ostrovsky quotes Admani, paraphrased, quote, no, we're not going to protect the Americans. They're a big country. The result, the described truck bombed the Marine barracks on October 23rd, 1983, killing 241 U.S. personnel. So again, this is a former Mossad agent who wrote a book saying that Mossad and Israel knew about the truck bombing plot and deliberately chose to not tell America at it because it was more beneficial for them if we, as America, were to be bombed and have a reason to go to war. Like, it was, you know, it's just a very convenient way to, again, get America involved in a conflict that we don't really have anything to do with. So I think it's important to point that out, that if you're talking about the 1983 truck bombing, first of all, Hezbollah didn't even exist then, so to call it a Hezbollah truck bombing is not even accurate. But if you want to point fingers at who's to blame, Israel holds, you know, a large share of the blame for that. But just before I let you go, John, and thank you for being on with us. And again, I encourage people to go follow John at Lebanon_John, and he's been providing a bunch of really good information throughout the last few days that I haven't found anywhere else. So your sources are very impeccable, John. But I want to ask you about the religious aspects of this conflict, because there are a lot of them, and they're becoming impossible to ignore. Randy Fine, big fat Congressman Randy Fine, says 2,400 years ago, we took out the ruler of Persia who would kill us all, and we did it again this year. Happy Purim. You don't need to be Jewish to celebrate it. The Purim War against Iran, right? So they're like celebrating and advertising like, yeah, we did this on a religious holiday. So I guess America war activity is dictated by the like holiday schedule of the Jews. That's great. U.S. troops, meanwhile, were told that the Iran war is, quote, for Armageddon and the return of Jesus. So apparently this memo went out where they're telling people, yeah, this is about ushering in the, you know, apocalypse and Jesus returning. And it's just like, how did we get to the point that this apocalyptic death cult Jewish extremism is just being like openly advertised now is like why we do things? Why are we going to war with Iran? Because I don't know, the rabbi told us to. It's like completely insane how this, again, radical extremist Jewish death cult is openly operating, like using the power of the American military to its own ends. Can you shed some light on this for me, John? Like, what is your interpretation of the way that the Purim thing and the apocalyptic thing has become this mainstream talking point now.
Yes. So basically, the United States is ruled by, there's a state religion, is essentially what you were uncovering, is that everyone growing up, we all were told that there is no official state religion. Well, apparently there is, and apparently there always has been. And so the official state religion is, you know, it's basically a form of Christianity that believes that you have to create a massive war, you know, like what George Bush told Charles de Gaulle, mm-hmm. where you have to create this massive war to bring about the second coming of Christ, because they're going to call the Antichrist the second coming of Christ. And so they already are lining up their believers to believe in the Antichrist. They're preparing them from now that the arrival of the Antichrist would be a good thing. Now, I don't think any of this is actually going to come to fruition the way that they think it is. But we do have a First Amendment. We do have a freedom of religion. We do have a separation of church and state. So we've basically exposed them right now. And Americans need to drive this home, where I don't ascribe to that particular theology, and I cannot be forced to have a state religion. And we have to vote to go to war. We cannot go to war based on a particular religious interpretation. We never had a vote on that, and that's, you know, it's a secret state religion. It's a de facto state religion, but we never had a discussion on that. And so that's why, obviously, people who are traditional Christians don't have that interpretation of Scripture, and actually a lot of rabbis don't have this interpretation of Scripture. There's a lot of Jews who do not agree with this particular interpretation. The truth is that this form of Judeo-Christian ideology is used as a tool for control. The Rothschilds, who are the sponsors of the entire Israeli project, who Epstein said he works for them, he represents them, yeah. They are using this as a cover, right? Because what does it say in Revelations? It says they claim they are Jews, but they are not. So they're not actually Jews. The Bible says that they're claiming they're Jews, but they're not. And so they're using it as a cover, very similar to how there's a lot of people who are, you know, in this faction who claim to be Christians, but like you said earlier, they're not even Christians. And then there's very, very similar. They have forms of Islam, which are completely at odds with the teachings of Islam historically, but they're claiming to be Muslim. That's why in Lebanon we have a phrase, we call them the thieves of religion. They want to steal the brand. They're hijacking the brand of Judaism. That's what the Rothschilds have done with the Zionist project, that the brand of Judaism itself has been hijacked. And now you have to equate Judaism with Zionism, even if there's tons of rabbis that tell you that's not the correct interpretation of Torah. They don't care. They're just stealing the brand of Judaism. They're stealing the brand of Christianity. They want Christianity to be associated with this. You know, they don't even let you talk about it. And same thing with Islam. They want Islam to just be this Wahhabi, Sunni, radical ideology, which is horrible and is not historically in line with, like, for example, Iran doesn't have that ideology at all. And they want to kill all the Shiites. They're totally bloodthirsty. And the same thing with these Zionist Christians. They're very ruthless against traditional Christians. They absolutely hate traditional Christians. And the same thing with the Jews. The Zionists absolutely hate Jews who do not ascribe to Zionism as the end-all, be-all of Jewish theology. So, you know, there's Jews in Israel. They're just brutally oppressed and beat by the Israeli government because they don't support this stuff, right? So they're trying to steal the brand. And they use religion to control people, and it's totally fake. It's totally disingenuous. These people are not actually religious, and I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but this is very much tied to Freemasons. This is the Freemason religion of a unified global religion, which they call ecumenism, where all these religions are going to morph into one religion because the Antichrist is going to rule in one religion and one government. So they're convening all these religions into one religion, and that's the problem in this country is that these people run this country, and they're very tied to the foundation of a lot of parts of this country. So, you know, even me saying this is very dangerous, even for me, because these people run everything, right? From the police judge to the police chief to the judge to the founder of every town. I mean, they're everywhere. This country is, as we have now exposed, it is a state religion, and this is the official state religion of this country.
And, of course, I don't know if you saw, but there's a 20-year serviceman who made a video saying he was investigated. He was being investigated by the U.S. military for his anti-Israel posts. He opposed Israel, and now the American government is basically investigating him and, you know, possibly going to kick him out of the military because he doesn't support a foreign country. It just shows you how far gone this is. But then you've got things like Marco Rubio saying, well, you know, these Iranians are these crazy religious nut jobs and there's no negotiating with them because they're, you know, just these religious extremists. Meanwhile, you've got Benjamin Netanyahu giving a speech saying all of Iran is Amalek and we must fulfill our duty to destroy Amalek. So it's like, I think there's one, you know, there's one side that is also, very much motivated by an apocalyptic death cult of religious extremism. And it's Israel and the evangelicals who fall for it, here in America. It's just wild stuff, John.
I know. It's very dangerous. Like, we're actually putting our lives in danger by talking about this. They absolutely run this country. And we, there's a groundswell, an organic movement to try to win this country back. And we have to do it legally. And we have to tell people, and we have to go to court, and we have to say, this is violating my First Amendment right.
Yes.
Because I have freedom of religion. You cannot enforce a state religion upon us. You cannot go to war without a vote according to one particular theology. We do not have a state religion in this country. Remember my debate with Pastor Sam? That's what I was telling him. He went crazy on me.
Yeah, it was a call in to American Journal, and Pastor Sam basically told John that his family in Lebanon deserved to be eradicated in a nuclear cloud because that's what Jesus Christ demands of us. It's just completely insane. But I think you're exactly right. We have to start filing First Amendment lawsuits. We have to start opposing this using the First Amendment because that's exactly what's going on here. They are violating the First Amendment. And I've explained this over and over. I don't even understand how this isn't like common knowledge and just readily understood by everybody. The First Amendment and the freedom of religion means you have the freedom to disobey, to hate, to criticize, or to work against any religion. That's what it means. That's intrinsic to it. It's not like it also means that. No, like that's what it means. If you were in a Catholic place, you wouldn't be allowed to criticize the Catholic Church or question the Catholic Church or not be Catholic. That's the world that we live in, only it's this bizarre and, eschatological or whatever the word is, this death cult apocalyptic form of Judaism that is actually sending our young men to die overseas. Like, we have to oppose this and we have to do it using the First Amendment because that, at the end of the day, is what's being violated. Incredible stuff, John. Of course, follow John on X at @Lebanon_John. Moonbase.show is where you can find links to the Moonbase, Moonbase Live on Rumble. I do that with Lebanon John about once a week. We're not always the most consistent, but thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, everyone. And, just stick to the stick. Remember, they said we got to get rid of the First Amendment. Remember, they said that. That's because they know that that's their weakness.
100%, 100%. God bless the founding fathers for foreseeing this somehow 250 years ago. Incredible stuff. That was Lebanon John, again, my co-host on Moonbase Live. Follow him at @Lebanon_John. I want to go to a quick video here that is actually a lot of what John was just talking about. The illusion, I think, that Western countries, in particular America, has about their success using bombing campaigns. And just to put this in perspective, before we go to the video, we're going to go to clip 37 here, the escalation trap, a.k.a. the smart bomb trap. Just understand that since October 2023, Israel has poured everything it possibly could into Gaza, and they still have not defeated Hamas. Gaza, I remind you, is a 20-mile square strip of land with no mountains, with no gullies, with no cliffs, with no coverage of any sort. It was an open-air prison whose only geographic feature to give Israel any problems were some tunnels. Now, they think that they're going to destroy Iran using the same tactics and strategy that have failed to take out Hamas. Do you understand how stupid that is? Do you understand that Iran is a country of 90 million people with multiple giant mountain ranges? I mean, it's crazy for these people to think, after failing for 2.5 years to even, you know, damage Hamas to any significant, I mean, they still can't get Hamas to disarm. Hamas is still armed, and it's still like just as numerous as it ever was. So what do they think is going to happen with Iran? You think it's going to be different? You think it's going to be easier with Iran? It's baffling to the point of retardation. Let's go to clip 37 here, the escalation trap that Trump and the Americans may be falling into. Let's watch.
Well, I have studied every air campaign since World War I. This is my specialty. I spent 3 years teaching conventional targeting strategy for the U.S. Air Force. I've studied leadership decapitation in detail. I've modeled the bombing of Fordow, the regime change in Iran, for 20 years. So this is something I know quite a bit about. And literally 10 days ago, I started on Substack the escalation trap because I worried exactly watching the armada being built, we would fall into the escalation trap. And that's what's happened. We are now in the grip of the escalation trap, or the smart bomb trap, to be more precise, where the illusion of the 100% tactical success, which is real, it's the success of the bombs blowing up the targets, is not false. It creates the illusion of control of escalation. And that is the smart bomb trap, and that is what has gripped us right now. And the problem is that once we drop those bombs and once we announce regime change is our goal, and we had no other tools trying to do this from the air, this has never worked in over 100 years. This is not like it works sometimes or rarely works. I'm choosing my words carefully. President Trump is up against the weight of history here, and it's the illusion of the smart bombs being near perfect in destroying their target. And the problem is when those bombs fall, they change politics in the target. They inject nationalism into the regime. They inject nationalism into the society. And they essentially fuse the regime and society against the air power attacker. And this is what you are seeing, because now society and the regime are taking more risky steps. And they do things that no one anticipated before. And that failure to anticipate the worst case, that has happened numerous times with smart bombs. That's just what happened in the last 36 hours.
Yeah, so again, you know, Trump is now facing the weight of history. For more than a century, air campaigns have tried to topple regimes from the sky. The record is brutal. Failure and retaliation, often costly. Putin has tried many times in Kiev, hardening resistance. And, of course, that's with sort of a plan from the beginning to have a long-term air campaign. It seems to me like with the scrambling that America is now doing, no more than 3-4 days into this conflict, apparently we are reorganizing THAAD missile launchers, and there's stories of, you know, major naval ships being hurriedly, you know, filled with people and equipment to ship over there. Like, either we thought this was going to be a one and done weekend operation and it would be over and we failed in that, or this was always meant to be a longer term thing and we just didn't bother to get all the pieces ready. I mean, this makes no sense. It can't be both these. Iranian drones and missiles challenge stretched U.S. forces. This is from Wall Street Journal. The U.S. is facing increasing risks to its military forces and diplomatic presence in the Middle East as Iran is launching waves of missile and drone attacks across the region that are testing its ability to defend a swath of territory. And again, they're saying that, you know, Iran doesn't have any launchers left yet, but that's doesn't actually seem to be the case, as you have stories like this. U.S. considers relocating THAAD and Patriots to the Middle East because we are, you know, desperately trying to reorganize our military to deal with this hornet's nest we kicked.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win, or a non-zero-sum game, or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue, or our bovine colostrum, or our CMOS, or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, Instantly $40 goes in, so you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexandersquare.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexandersquare.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAlchemistStore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Listen closely to what's happening here. On one side, you have members of Congress saying they were told there was no intelligence that Iran was preparing an imminent attack on the United States. And they were told that directly by the Pentagon. And yet, publicly, President Trump has claimed that Iran was building missiles to strike America. So which is it? See, right now, there are far more questions than answers. Why did this war start? And how long is it supposed to last? Secretary of War Pete Hegseth said just this morning that this is not a regime change war, but the regime has been changed. Listen.
Turns out the regime who chanted death to America and death to Israel was gifted death from America and death from Israel.
So wouldn't that make it a regime change war? I mean, what other possible criteria could there be for a regime change war? Unfortunately, those are questions that even the people authorizing this war do not seem able to answer.
Is there a plan? Does the president have a plan to guarantee that that happens?
No, it's not his job or my job to do this.
Okay, well, hold on. Wait a minute here. So that's not our job. It's not the job of the president of the United States or a U.S. senator to decide who's in charge of Iran. Listen, I totally agree with that. You're not going to get any argument from me. The problem is that is until the U.S. kills all the leadership of Iran. And according to Trump, he didn't just kill the existing leadership. He also killed the entire bench. And that's the biggest point. No one knows what's next. And there is no plan for what's next. In fact, there isn't even a plan for what's now. Because from everything we're watching, this war is already taking turns that were not anticipated. For instance, you kill the leadership, as we have in so many other regime change wars, that's what this is, and the country and the military fall apart. But it's not happening so far in Iran. In fact, I told you just last week that war with Iran is very different than war with Iraq 23 years ago. What's different? How about the fact that even with all the leadership dead, missiles continue to be fired, and we're talking about hundreds of missiles every day, striking Israel, Gulf state nations, and U.S. military bases. Why? Because in anticipation of this, Iran decentralized its entire military structure and strategy. So far, our military had that part wrong. The next thing our politicians seem to have wrong, the idea that the Iranian people would rise up and take their country back. President Trump said the other night that this is their best chance to do so. Listen.
I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment, to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country.
Yeah, but so far, the video coming out of the country tells a very different story. Most media is not going to show you this. A lot of people are denying that this is even real. But hundreds of thousands of Iranians are taking to the streets, not to protest their government, but to protest our government, calling for death to America and death to Israel. Doesn't this sound familiar? We have seen this playbook so many times before. You remove a government, you destabilize a region, and then you act shocked by what comes after. And then, of course, there's a third part of this war that was apparently unforeseen. It's how much warfare has changed in just the last 20 years. Look, right now, Iran is launching drones that can cost anywhere from $30,000 to $35,000 to produce. But the missiles used to shoot them down by the U.S. and Israel, those cost anywhere from $500,000 to $4 million per intercept. In other words, every time one of those drones is actually hit or destroyed, defense systems may be spending hundreds of times more money than the weapon they're taking out. and they are taking out massive targets. The Iranians are. Over the weekend, the Iranians used a $30,000 drone to attack and destroy a $300 million U.S. radar system in Bahrain. So early estimates indicate that the U.S. has already lost billions in military bases, equipment, radar, fighter jets. The economic cost of this war is staggering, and I'll remind you, it's only been going on for 3 days. See, military analysts say that may actually be part of the strategy here. Launch large numbers of relatively cheap drones and force your opponent to burn through extremely expensive interceptors. And by the way, those missiles are not infinite. So estimates claim that the rate that the U.S. military is burning through those interceptor missiles, we could have the entire supply run through in just 10 days.
The great Ben Swan, everybody, with a very thorough report. More on the other side. Breaking news, reactions from senators. Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Continuing to cover the Iranian war, it looks like a bunch of senators and congressmen just emerged from a briefing with Marco Rubio and have made statements about what they think is next in Iran. It appears as though we started this conflict with no approval from Congress, obviously, no game plan as to where this goes and what the ultimate goals are. No outlay whatsoever as to who will take over Iran once we do kill all of their leaders. Now apparently we're bombing the new leaders. Okay. So now after the war has started, we're scrambling to try to get, you know, sufficient military resources in place to carry out this mission, which, again, hasn't really been explained. Now they say that they're going to basically try to arm the Kurds to take it over, which is not going to go over well with places like Turkey that are always at odds with the Kurds. And this, of course, has been what we've been predicting for the last week, because this was sort of an inevitable outcome because they don't have a plan to replace the Iranian leader. There isn't, in reality, as much as they say that there's this, you know, sizable portion of the Iranian population that just desperately wants Reza Pahlavi to rule over them. Like, it's ridiculous. That's not the case. So if they were to kill the leadership as they have, it's inevitable. It's just going to fall to factionalism. And in a place with so many different regional ethnicities and traditions, you're going to get factionalism like you did in Syria following the fall of Bashar al-Assad. So it appears as though the plan now is to simply turn all of Iran into a giant civil war quagmire of endless factional combat. Like, great. Wonderful. Well done. The world is so much safer now. Policy Tensor on X. Do they know what fires they're unleashing? If the Kurds agree to do this, it will have major consequences. The Turks will almost certainly intervene, at first with airstrikes and then with ground forces. They might even get in direct conflict with Israel, who they now see as a power bent on regional hegemony. The Iranian army will be deployed in the Kurdish region to counter those proxies. The ground war is unlikely to remain confined to the region, with Shia militants from Iraq joining the fight. It may spread much further than people anticipate. Kuwait is just a short drive away. Even if the proxies, backed by U.S.-Israeli air power, manage to push back the Iranian ground forces and survive Turkish pressure, that will not destabilize the regime in Tehran. It will create a breakaway province under Israeli influence. The Iranians will come back later to reclaim their territory, setting the stage for persistent conflict. This in response to Alex Ward's report saying President Trump is open to supporting groups in Iran willing to take up arms to dislodge the regime, U.S. officials said, an idea that could turn Iranian factions into ground forces, at least rhetorically backed by Washington. Again, the question is just like, what the hell are we doing? How is this a preferable condition? For what possible reason would we want to replace a Iranian leadership that, as much as Lindsey Graham and, Donald Trump say, oh, Ali Khamenei was this, like, radical that just wanted to kill America. What did Benjamin Netanyahu say in the clip earlier today? They're fanatical in their drive to destroy America. Look at their actions over the last, 30 years. It doesn't look to me an awful lot like overt aggression, constant, like, trouble causing. Like, they're not anything like Israel. Israel, you can't turn around. I mean, they're just like murdering sheep in the West Bank and just like firebombing children there. And then they're like invading Lebanon and just like setting fire to schools there, where they're also still bombing people in Gaza with no end in sight. I mean, they're just insane constantly everywhere. It's just outrageous. That's not been Iran. Iran has not been like that. In fact, the biggest concern about Iran had to be the nuclear weapons, which Ayatollah Khamenei had a fatwa against. He said no nuclear weapons. We killed the guy who resisted nuclear weapons. Now apparently there's a new supreme leader in Iran, and lo and behold, he's more extreme than Khamenei was. Ali Khamenei's son, Mojtaba, named Iran's new supreme leader. Iranian assembly of experts elected Ali Khamenei's son, Mojtaba, as the next supreme leader under pressure from the Revolutionary Guards, informed sources told Iran International. And so we have just deliberately created a quagmire cluster F in the region, even though they were negotiating with us, even though we'd had an agreement that Donald Trump tore up in his first administration. There is no justifying this. There is no ability for anybody honest to frame Iran as an existential threat to America, or a threat at all to America. In any way, at the very best, you could say that they were a threat to our regional partners, which would just mean Israel. And in a way, yeah, they are a threat to Israel, but only because Israel is insane and murderous and want to grab all of the land and destroy Iran and will not rest until that happens. And so, yeah, they're not going to let that happen. But if Israel just felt like no longer killing all of their neighbors with abandon, then it wouldn't even be an issue. From OSINT Defender on X, the United States and Israel are seeking to foment an armed uprising inside Iran using Kurdish fighting force, which has been built up since the 12-day war in 2025, according to ITV News. Sources claim that since last year, weapons have been smuggled into western Iran to arm thousands of Kurdish volunteers. They are expected to begin a ground operation within days and possible air cover by the U.S. and Israeli Air Force. Like, does anybody think this is a better idea than, like, arming British patriots? Like, is this really what we need to be focused on? Europe is being totally destroyed. Israel is, of course, just committing genocide all over the place. And we're just going to arm the Kurds to go attack Iran, and Turkey's going to get involved, and probably Israel's going to get involved with Turkey. And so we're basically setting up the next 20, 30 years of war with this one utterly retarded, inexplicable choice. And I said this yesterday on Twitter. It's like the confusion from the Trump administration, the incoherence and inconsistency of the statements that they're making. This is for Israel. It's not for Israel. We made Israel do it. Well, Israel kind of made us do it. I mean, this is particularly absurd because this was never a surprise. This never should have been a surprise. It's not like they were just like, ah, oh, yeah, let's, you know, do this real quick thing. It'll be no problem. And then it starts to spiral out of the hand. They're like, oh, we didn't expect. I mean, it's like there was a big red button that said war with Iran. And all they had to do was not press that button. Literally all they had to do. Donald Trump, if he could have just not pressed the war with Iran button for 4 years, he could have done pretty much anything else. You know, it would have been nice if we'd had mass deportations. This thing would have been nice. That would have been nice. We, you know, everybody has preferences of what they would want Trump to do. All he had to do was not press the war in Iran button. That's it. It's like the one true part. It's like he's like Eve in the Garden of Eden. So you have this huge bounty, a feast of every edible plant you could possibly imagine. Just if there's one that you're not supposed to eat. That's it. That's all we're asking. Just it's one thing, and it's not even appetizing. It's not even good. Why would you even want to? You know what I mean? It's like Trump's, you know, walking around a feast, delicious meals on every hand, you know, dishes and drinks and candy and all this stuff. And he just like can't help it for his whole first term. And now for a year in his second term, there's just a pile of human feces. And he's just like, God, I can't get my mind off that though. There's all this other stuff I could be doing, but that's calling for me for some reason. It's the one thing you're not supposed to do. It's the one thing in the entirety of all of the panoply of your abilities as president. The one thing you were supposed to avoid doing was go to war with Iran. What the hell is your problem? Why did you go to war with Iran? You didn't even have a good reason to. So it's just like, talk about the biggest blunder in American history. I can't, is it even a blunder? It's just like, what do you do? What do you do? I'm trying to think of other examples just because there's something so absurd about it. He could literally do anything. I mean, if he'd actually created concentration camps in this country for like illegal immigrants or whatever, people, you know, would be like, well, hey, at least it's solving a problem. At least it's getting rid of the immigrants. Yeah, maybe I'd like to see it done a little differently, but hey, they don't want to leave. We got to make them leave. We got to put them in camps for a while first. That's just what you got to do. Like, there's just pretty much anything. He could do pretty much anything. Just there's this one tripwire. This one tripwire. You know, or it's like, it's kind of what it is. It's like, all right, there's this tripwire called War with Iran, and it's like under the stairs in the basement of a disused YMCA in a burned out part of town. And it's like, you shouldn't even be there. You shouldn't even be anywhere near there. There's no reason why. It's like you had to go out of your way for a really long time to even find the tripwire, and then you trip over it. What the hell? And so just taking all this, not to just rant about what a like world endingly retarded thing it was for Trump to do this. Not just go off on that forever. We have to understand that this is Israel. We have to understand that it's the Israel influence. It is the pernicious effect of the Israeli diaspora here. And that includes their partners. That includes the American Jews that support them endlessly and fund their operations, people like Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro and all these other people, they need to be deprived of power. They need to be deliberately excluded from influence in our country. It is nothing but poison to us. The people that are going along with it are actual traitors to our country who have committed treason. And I would include Donald Trump with that. I do include Marco Rubio with that. I consider this unforgivable. And I think they should be tried in a Nuremberg-style thing. But not just them. Everybody else involved. All of the Israelis need to be, you know, declared enemies of the state. And everybody going along with them need to be held to account. I genuinely feel that way. because look at where we are, look at where it's going. And once again, we've lost God only knows how many American soldiers already. One American soldier is too many to sacrifice for Israel. I would rather see all of Israel turn to dust than a single American soldier die. Because what the hell do I care? They're not my country. Not my people. Doesn't affect me. I don't care. In fact, I do care. In fact, I care a lot. I think they're evil and bad and wrong and need to be punished by good people who are strong. For some reason, all of our good people are co-opted by these disgusting demons. So that's the point. That's what we have to deal with. All of this other stuff is downstream. All of this other stuff is dealing with the cancer as it manifests in the body, right? Dealing with all of the telling your soldiers that you're fighting for, you know, the Antichrist so that Jesus can come back, the Purim crap, all of that. That's like, those are the tumors that are growing on your skin. Israel is the cell phone tower sending out the radiation that's giving us the cancer. That's what has to be taken down. The influence of Israel. And can we not all unite on this? Is this not something that all Americans left and right can come together and say, F Israel, we want nothing to do with them. They provide nothing for us. They are nothing but a thorn in our side and a knife in our back. Please, can we come together and actually have a positive outcome from all of this? That we all wake up from this delusion that we've been in, this deliberate hypnotism that has been foisted on us by the Israelis, their diaspora, and their, you know, collusion throughout media and politics. We have to break this spell and free ourselves from this subversive element. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me they didn't just get us into war with Iran for no goddamn reason. So senators and congressmen have been given a briefing about this, and there's some very interesting videos that have come out. Let's go to Schumer first. This is Chuck Schumer, self-professed guardian of Israel, with a little Freudian slip. Let's watch.
Do you think Israel, you know, forced the U.S.'s hand here, boxed the U.S. in on this?
Look, no one wants a nuclear war. No one wants a nuclear Israel, but we certainly don't want an endless war, plain and simple. What did I say? Oh, no. Got it. Let me say that again. No one wants an endless war, but we certainly don't want a nuclear Iran. That's for sure. Okay?
At what point does the lack of DHS funding
come about? Yeah, but, you know, Israel having secret nukes, that is fine and good. Actually, it's good. Lindsey Graham also came out of this. Gee, I wonder what his interpretation is going to be. Let's go to Lindsey Graham after this briefing with Marco Rubio.
So I've never felt better about how this ends. It's not if they fall, it's when they fall. It's not us alone, it's us with the region. Europe is now getting into the game. So I want to compliment President Trump for starting something that the world is now gravitating to. This regime is in its death throes. The amount of firepower coming in the next day or two from us is going to be overwhelming. And when you add to the mix the Arab capability, then it's going to be overwhelming. The demise of this regime is at hand, and the goal is to make sure they can never be a threat like they were before.
And again, he must just be like, we would all be blessed to be able to feel what Lindsey Graham is feeling right now. Hopefully it comes for you in the form of something fulfilling like the birth of a child. But for Lindsey Graham, this is the fulfillment of 30, 40 years of desire. Oh, no, wait. He's now wants to go after Cuba. Now it'll be, we have to go after Cuba. Now it'll be Cuba wants to kill us. Cuba chants death to America. We can't rest. We'll never be safe until Cuba can be taken out. Oh, and Turkey. And also Turkey. And by the way, Russia. And have we told you that China is an existential threat? Guys, we got to just go to war forever and ever and ever and ever and ever, because otherwise Israel will have to stop killing children. So it's unacceptable. We cannot allow for Israel to have to be moderated even slightly in their insane aggressive activities around with all of their neighbors. It's just that has to go on unimpeded, relentlessly. And if the cost of that is every American missile ever built and the death of hundreds of thousands of Americans or tens of thousands of American servicemen. It's a small price to pay so that Israel doesn't have to, you know, be criticized for killing people. That's the point of all of this. Let's go to Chris Murphy here, Democrat, on what he thought about the briefing with Marco Rubio.
Senate. This is as serious as it gets. This is war and peace. They told us in that room that there are going to be more Americans that are going to die, that they are not in the short run going to be able to stop these drones that are going to continue to fly into the Middle East. We have to have a debate in the United States Senate on an authorization of military force. It will likely fail. It will likely fail, and we shouldn't be voting to proceed to other pieces of legislation until we get a debate on this deeply unpopular, immoral, and illegal war with Iran.
I think the debate needs to be about Israeli influence. It can't just stick to this Iran war. The Iran war, again, is a symptom of a sickness. It is a manifestation of a of the real problem, which is the Israeli influence, which for the survival of our nation has to be extricated, has to be ruthlessly. And again, I would be thrilled if the Democrats helped to lead that charge. Not that they oppose, you know, Israel at all, really, at the end of the day. And you know, certainly when it came to the speech that Trump just gave, State of the Union, the only time that both parties stood up and clapped was when they talked about war with Iran. So it's not going to be an easy fight. You're talking about trying to extricate Israeli influence from a group that is basically entirely controlled by them at this point. So, you know, we're going to rely on the few outlier mavericks like Thomas Massie and Ro Khanna. But the sentiment in America is there. And they'll come along. I mean, they'll follow the train once they see it's leaving the station. Politicians, at the end of the day, they want to get elected. They want to do what's popular. They want to at least be able to tell their constituents that they stood up against white supremacy by opposing war with Iran or whatever dumbass crap they have to sell their retarded audience. But regardless, it's like we can come together on this. We can do this, and whoever does it first is going to receive such an overwhelming amount of approval from the American people that other politicians are going to want to get into it, get in on it. Let's go now to, I believe, one more. This is Mullins, Senator Mullins, and I believe he's a Republican, right? And he is trying to defend what's going on in Iran. Let's watch.
Are there measures being taken not to eliminate other possible alternatives to leadership?
This is war, and we're taking out the threat. Mm-hmm. And if you're part of the threat, then you have then you're a target. You know, what we'd call not all the arrows, but going after the archers.
You'll concede this is war. You'll concede this is war.
We haven't declared war. They declared war on us, but we haven't.
War, Secretary Hegseth.
We haven't declared war. Just now, you said this is war.
They've called it war.
They've called it war. What I was saying, okay, well, that was a misspoke. What I was saying that they've declared war on us, but war is ugly. It always has been ugly. But we're taking out a regime that's been trying to attack us for quite some time.
But you're not conceding this is war.
We have declared war. So if we haven't declared war, then I don't see that. The president hasn't asked us to declare war yet. But they have declared war on us. We're just simply fighting the threat that's been at our door for 47 years.
Senator, aren't you just avoiding
it? I've already answered the question.
Do you believe that ask could be coming, that an ask from?
So it is war. I'll just let you know right now. I looked up the definition, and yes, it is war. This is war that's happening. The fact that you're not calling it a war because you don't have an authorization to wage a war doesn't mean that what's happening isn't a war. It just means it's an illegal war. Okay? That's how this works. And I'm frankly just sick of this excuse that can be used for anything, apparently. Why'd you bomb the hospital, Israel? This is war. Okay, why did you bomb the people you were negotiating with for regime change? Then when the new regime change came in, you bombed them also. And it's just like, this is war. And it's like, war does not mean you just stupidly kill everybody that happens to cross your path. Like, I'm sick of this excuse of just like, it's war, so we can't think about what we're doing or pay attention to the consequences. It's war, after all. We started a war, and now that means we are just not you know, responsible for anything that happens from this point on. It's war. It is war? No, it's not. It's not war.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalists. And the AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigley. The backup Alex Jones Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I'm going to work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, TheAlexJonesStore.com can keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexJonesStore.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexJonesStore.com because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win-win. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring. Or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers. And with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be joined now by Peter Beistren. He is a principled Czech-born German politician and dedicated member of the European Parliament for Germany's Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD party, proudly representing the Europe of Sovereign Nations group. As a respected voice on the Foreign Affairs Committee and beyond, Peter champions free speech, multipolar cooperation, and a Europe of strong sovereign nations, remaining steadfast in his convictions amid ongoing political challenges, which, of course, makes him an enemy of the New World Order and the globalists who would rather fold us all into a lukewarm, a monochromatic nothingness. So welcome to the show, sir. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Harrison, and welcome to everybody in the United States for watching us. I am proud to be in War Room again.
Well, we're very proud to have you, and I feel like we have to provide you a service here using our free speech in America to try to help Europeans speak for themselves and speak out for themselves. And Europe, of course, is under crushing censorship, and it's really only increasing. And this is having some pretty devastating impacts, specifically to you and to Alternative for Germany. Can you tell us what's the latest with the AfD?
Well, that's true, but it's the same like in the U.S. What Biden administration has done to your opposition in the United States, especially to the MAGA movement, the same is happening to us in Europe, especially to the AfD and in Germany. You know, we don't have Biden here, but we have Ursula von der Leyen. We have the Commission of the European Commission. And they are doing the same things. And the newest discoveries come, thanks to God, from the USA. House of Representatives, the Judicial Committee, found out that the European Commission was influencing U.S. Platforms, big tech companies like Meta, Google, X, since 2015 to censor all the conservative voices from Europe as well as from the USA.
Yeah, and this is, again, we see this a lot in America specifically, but if they can't do something through the government, they'll use a private organization sort of circumvent restrictions and rights that we have. So in America, right, we have it's illegal to search without a warrant. But if they're searching, you know, a company and the company just provides the material willingly, then they don't actually need a warrant. So we're seeing the way that private companies are often sort of filling in places where governments are not able to surveil to their heart's extent. Is that what's happening here? Is that the American government is pressuring American companies to censor Europeans for European political reasons? Is that what's happening here?
No, what was happening here, and I am very thankful to my friend Jim Jordan, who was explaining it in the House of Representatives, you know, that the European Commission did the pressure on American companies, and it was a really huge pressure, just one single number, you know, they fined. Let X, Elon Musk, platform X, had to pay 120 million euro fine because they refused the censorship, you know.
So, right.
And before they enforced Zuckerberg of Facebook, you know, to censor all the platforms. This is really huge. So we know that at least two elections for the European Parliament were heavily influenced by this, and really a high number of national elections across Europe, name it, Czech Republic, Italy, France, Germany, all those, Romania, most famous example from the latest time, were heavily influenced. So this is a big scandal, and thank to Jim Jordan that he put it into public. And I think this is just the start of the investigation, because this is really huge. Just maybe I give you just one example, because this what the European Union and what the governments in Europe are doing, this censorship, it of course targets the biggest US platforms we are talking about, but they are also doing pressure even on TikTok, which is a Chinese company, you know. And it happened to me when I was foreign policy speaker in the German parliament, that they censored three speeches of me on TikTok after each other in 1 week, because it was against the war in the Ukraine, and they deleted always one speech, second speech, third speech. And at the end of the week, I lost the whole TikTok account, so I had no TikTok account at all. And we were asking, so what's going on? And we asked TikTok to give it back to me. And just listen what we got then as the answer from Beijing, from communist China, they said, oh, Mr. Bison, you will not get the account back because the German government is doing such a heavy pressure on TikTok Germany because you were criticizing the German government. So then we cannot give you the account back. You know, just imagine, you know, this is my job as an opposition politician to criticize the government. And they said, no, because you have been criticizing the German government, your account will be deleted. So
wow.
This is what, yeah. And the Chinese, at least they admitted it, you know, we have the same on the other side.
But you would think that, okay, here's this Chinese company that's censoring you unfairly, and you'd go to them. But no, they're actually doing it because the German government wants
exactly.
them to do that. And of course,
exactly.
You know, X has a pretty clear, and they don't always stick to it. But their standard is like, if it's legal language, then it's allowed on the platform. I think that's a good standard. But there's something very strange about the fact that it's speeches you're making in Parliament or you know, in Congress with the EU. As a representative, it's speeches on the floor or things that you're saying in public that are then not allowed to be put on the platform. It's like if a representative of the people is saying it in a speech, how is it not allowed on a platform? I mean, that is just such a bizarre disconnect.
You hit the nail. You know, this is exactly what's the point. The European Commission was censoring politicians who right. are elected, who are representing millions of people, they were censoring scientific data, the truth. They were censoring the truth during the corona pandemics. You know, they censored all the professors, doctors who were telling the truth, but it was just in contrary of the narrative which was produced by Pfizer, by all the other organizations, you know, by Fauci. They just wanted to spread their narrative, and they oppressed everything what was against it.
Well, and of course, the irony is that this is, to me, cut and dry election influence, right? You're going in and silencing one party and giving the other party a platform, that's going to have major outcomes. And yet a lot of the censorship that Europe is engaged in is itself predicated on, well, we have to protect our elections and Russian influence and all this pernicious influence from Elon Musk. But it's the opposite, right? It's total projection. They're the one influencing the elections through their censorship, and yet they're predicating it on election interference. Help me square that circle. How do we explain this?
Russian interference is a very, very good point. We have experienced it in Europe heavily before the election for the European Parliament last year. I was a target of it as well as other colleagues. And that was really massive. The establishment created a campaign, which was the Voice of Europe affair. And they said exactly, it was again nearly the same like in the U.S. What happened to Donald Trump before, you know, they just accused politicians from several European countries that they are Russian agents, Russian spies. How? Just imagine what they created. They said that the news website from Czech Republic run by Ukrainian refugees, that it was a tool of Russian propaganda, and this website, this news site, should influence the whole European elections. I mean, it was, in fact, it was a total nonsense, okay? But nobody of the big media, no one, even not CNN or any other big outlet, was questioning this narrative. They just repeated it. They just said, yes, this was a tool of Russian propaganda. It was created to influence the whole European elections. In addition to that, every politician who gave an interview to this website was bribed by Putin, received the money. Millions of US dollars were paid in cash, you know, and this is what they spread before the election. 10,000 times. And I have a list here, you know. It was in France, they accused the former minister, Thierry Mariani, and also his colleague, Patricia Chagnon. In Italy, Matteo Gazzini, Francesca Donato, both of right-wing parties. In Holland, Thierry Baudet, Marcel de Graaf. In Germany, myself and my colleague Maximilian Krah. So this campaign was really, really heavy. And how it worked? Wow. The mainstream admitted itself that they are proud of it, that they influence the election. Just imagine, you know, we have a post which was done by the one of the biggest, most influential political one of the biggest political news sites in German public television, yeah, and they published a graphic saying like, look, our campaigns are working. We put down the AfD within the campaign before the election. We put them down from some 25% down to 70. This is, you can see it. This is the graphics now. So we, in January that year, we were in the polls by 23%. And they just said, okay, the first campaign was a fake news campaign about re-immigration plans. And then they started this Russian collusion and then the Chinese collusion. And at the end, we had from 23%, wow, we landed at 16. And they not just, they just admitted it. They're proud of it. And you must take into consideration that the German public television it gets paid 9 billion euro per year. They cashing, you know, 9 billions. This is their budget. And for what are doing with this money, they are blackmailing opposition. So this is what happened and before the European election.
Wow. So that's what we're looking at here. This graphic is actually them documenting how successfully they took away basically 13-14% of AfD support through just a couple of well-placed stories. So they had a scandal about re-immigration. They had a fake scandal about, being a pro-Russian network, and then a fake espionage scandal about China. And they're saying, look, with these three stories, we severely hampered this extremely popular party. And you're right. They're bragging about it. They're actually saying what a great job we've done, how successful our operations have been. I mean, that's really something else.
Exactly. And you see, this is what happened in Germany. So they pushed us down by 7%, which is just a lot if you see it. It's nearly one third of the votes we could get. And the same happened, you know, on international scale. And here we are coming back to the U.S. because this was, you know, till now we were just talking about censoring the social media, censoring us as politicians, you know, censoring everybody who is against the mainstream.
Right.
But now we have a other topic, which is propaganda. The European Commission was paying media for spreading their propaganda. And the European Commission was not the first one who got this idea. The first one was the CIA, was the deep state in the U.S. In fact, they cooperated with the U.S.-based NGO, which is called OCCRP. And this was for years spreading fake news materials or maybe even illegally by secret services stolen information across the world. And this U.S. NGO, OCCRP, the members are the biggest publishing houses across Europe. So mainly they distributed fake news. And we discovered that this American NGO received more than half a million euros, 600,000 euros, just right after the election. So 1 month after the election, the EU Commission said, oh, thank you very much for blackmailing the opposition. We pay you now 600,000 euros. And this is really incredible.
No, it is. And there's a couple of selections here that are really kind of jaw-dropping, where it says, OCCRP's original funding came from the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs in the State Department, and quotes a USAID official who says, OCCRP founder Drew Sullivan is, quote, just nervous about being linked with law enforcement. If people who are going to give you information think you're a cop, that's a problem. It appears as though the beginning of OCCRP's practice of hiding U.S. government funding. So this all came out of USAID. OCCRP does not operate like a normal news organization. Its goals appear to include interfering with foreign political matters, including elections, with an eye towards causing regime change. Sullivan told NDR that his organization had, quote, probably been responsible for five to six countries changing over from one government to another government and getting prime ministers indicted or thrown out. So there's a USAID offshoot organization called the Organized Crime Corruption Reporting Project. And here they are bragging about using propaganda to literally overthrow governments. It's amazing.
What you are quoting is the excellent work of a U.S. investigative journalist, Michael Schellenberger. Compliments for this. He found out great stuff. And there is really a funny story I can tell you because I was involved directly, you know. In those documents, there is a quote about the NDR. This is a German public television, and they did the documentation. They were part of OCCRP, and they did the documentation about the work of OCCRP. So everybody thought, like, oh, this is going to be a other kind of propaganda. This is going to be something nice about the OCCRP. And the boss of OCCRP, Gerald Sullivan, he was interviewed by them, and no, he felt very comfortable, so he was talking like, yeah, we influenced the elections, we are responsible for the change of governments in five or maybe six countries across the Europe. And then at the end, when they saw the final result, when they saw the whole documentation, they recognized, oh, fuck, this is not, this is really a hot topic. So they censored the whole documentation. So it was produced, finalized, but never displayed. And a French journalist finally put it online. It was censored again. I put it online again as a politician. I said, well, this is important. Look, I put it online. And guess what? The German public television hired the most expensive U.S. lawyers, a big, big law firm, and they sued me and they said, if you show it again, you will pay €50,000 straight.
Wow.
So they censored it the third time, you know. And in this documentation, the boss of OCCRP, Drew Sullivan, U.S. citizen, you know, again, is saying, oh, well, we probably been responsible for five or six countries changing over from one government to another government. So this is what journalists are doing. They are paid by USAID. Donald Trump, thanks to God, stopped the funding through USAID. But now the European Union, European Commission is continuing this work and is paying those media for spreading propaganda.
Wow. And again, yeah, this is from Michael Schellenberger's story on his public Substack. The Censorship Industrial Complex Part 3, The Foreign Threat, and this is from February 12, 2025. And just for our American audience, they'll, you know, understand why it's important to understand this stuff. The CIA whistleblower, whose complaint became the basis for the 2019 impeachment of President Trump, relied upon reporting by a supposedly independent investigative news organization called the Organized Crime Corruption Reporting Project, which appears to have effectively operated as an arm of the USAID. In a censored 2024 documentary by German television broadcaster NDR, a USAID official claimed the USAID approves OCCRP's annual work plan and approves new hires of key personnel. So when they wanted to stop Trump from looking into the war in Ukraine and putting a stop to the buildup of the war during his first administration, it was a whistleblower complaint from this exact organization that was then working with the local German broadcaster, produced a documentary, realized the documentary made them look not very good, and so they've censored it three times over now. They're scrambling, but they're desperate to shut you up. They're desperate that people don't know about this. And it shows, you know, if they were just honest, it wouldn't look so scrambling. They wouldn't be covering everything up. They wouldn't be, you know, so desperate to try to hide this stuff, if they could just tell the truth. That's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, but of course they are desperate and they are very, very aggressive by oppressing this, because they know that this is highly criminal, you know. And also all the mainstream media, they would lose the rest of the credibility they have. Just look what is happening again and again. And I can explain it on this campaign, a Voice of Europe campaign, which happened before the election to the European Parliament. As I said, they just claimed, they said one news site from Prague run by Ukrainian refugees was a tool to influence the elections within all the European countries. And nobody questioned it. Der Spiegel didn't question it. CNN didn't question it. You know, big outlets didn't question it, just spread this propaganda. And then one Czech journalist, you know, he just went on the website, he was looking on it, and he said, like, well, wait. How can it be that the English content is, you know, of this website can influence the whole election across the whole Europe if they get 4 or 5 likes?
Right.
You know, it was, the website was maybe read in Czech Republic, maybe in Ukraine, but it has zero influence across Europe.
Well, and again, it's just exactly what they did in America. I mean, you know, there was a Russian ad that 4 people liked on Facebook, and they said, see, Russians are affected. I mean, it's just the exact same playbook, point by point.
Yeah, but the European Commission paid those biggest outlets €600,000 after the election. Guess for what? For investigative journalism. And I am asking myself, you know, are they kidding us? You know, what is this of investigative journalism if you spread a total fake news? 5-year-old kids can see this is total nonsense, but they are just spreading it and doing the opposite of investigative journalism, you know, they're just spreading propaganda.
Right, the opposite of investigative journalism. Now, I know we don't have too much... Yeah. Longer with you, but I know, I don't know, do you want to tease a little bit a video that you guys are translating right now? I understand you had a bit of a fiery interaction with somebody at the EU Commission. Do you want to tease that a little bit, or should we let people
come
wait?
On, you can. Oh, yeah. this is a top secret topic. You cannot tell it on television right now. But okay, you did it already. So, well, yes. We had a very, very hot discussion with the former commissioner Thierry Breton in a committee right now. This guy is under U.S. sanctions. Donald Trump was putting him on sanctions because, again, Thierry Breton was involved in censoring X, or was doing pressure on U.S. companies. This guy got famous because he said when there was talk about the election interference in Romania, he said, yes, we did it in Romania and we are going to do it again in Germany. So he indirectly admitted that the European Commission is influencing elections. So I had a dispute with him in a committee in the European Parliament, and we will display this video very soon, and I will be happy when the American audience will see it, maybe at InfoWars.
Just a little teaser there, and people will enjoy it greatly. Thank you so much for being here with me. Peter Beistrin has been my guest. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your work, and God bless America.
God bless you. We'll talk to you next time. Thank you, sir.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the #1 news app in the world. Go to Alex Jones.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first 4 guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants.
But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you can become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.